guys are sponsoring the programming on this here little radio network, and they rock. Very simply, they rock. And last but not least, thank you, listeners, for joining me again today for a little jaunt down the progressive path. And remember, it's your democracy, too, and it's not a spectator sport. I will see you tomorrow.
And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution.
This is the Quality News Network. In response to North Korea's nuclear weapons test, the UN Security Council met today. The 15-nation council quickly issued a unanimous resolution to condemn North Korea. The members will now discuss the appropriate measures to take. The U.S. says it will seek sanctions against North Korea. The U.S. may also seek international inspections to check for weapons of cargo entering and leaving North Korea. America is also lobbying for a trade ban on military and luxury items. The UN Security Council has unanimously nominated South Korea's Foreign Minister Ban Ki-moon to be the next UN Secretary General. He must still be confirmed by the UN General Assembly. In Baghdad, the brother of Iraq's vice president was assassinated today. 13 other people were killed after a car bomb went off at a busy marketplace. 46 were wounded. In the Anbar province, 3 Marines were killed yesterday. That brings to 32 the number of U.S. forces killed in Iraq in the last 9 days. In Sadr City, 11 Iraqi soldiers were kidnapped at a checkpoint south of Baghdad yesterday. As many as 400 Iraqi policemen were poisoned after eating a meal at a base. The poisoning is under investigation and several mess hall cooks are under arrest. In Washington, a bipartisan commission assessing the Bush administration's Iraq operations is expected to recommend a departure from the president's stay-the-course strategy. Former Secretary of State James Baker co-chairs the group. Another recall from California's Salinas Valley, this time for lettuce greens packaged under the Foxy brand. The lettuce was available between October 3rd and 6th in 7 western states. The company says the lettuce may have been irrigated by water contaminated with E. coli. No illnesses have yet been reported. The Washington Post reports another GOP congressman, Arizona's Jim Colby, knew about former Congressman Mark Foley's inappropriate emails to congressional pages as far back as 6 years ago. Cuban President Fidel Castro is dying of cancer, according to Time magazine. His brother Raul, Cuba's acting president, denies the report. In London, the leader of Northern Ireland's largest Protestant political party met with the head of the province's Roman Catholic Church. The formal talks are the first of its kind. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
American Edmund Phelps has won the Nobel Prize for Economics. The Columbian University professor explains the trade-offs between inflation and how it affects unemployment. A new species of brilliantly colored brush finch has been discovered in the Andean cloud forest. Its discovery has prompted the Colombian government to set aside a 500-acre pristine forest as a national park. Today, Google bought YouTube for $1.65 billion in stock. The acquisition came just hours after YouTube announced deals with CBS and 2 major music labels. The popular video sharing site is attempting to avoid copyright infringement lawsuits. In the past 2 weeks, the average price of a gallon of unleaded gasoline fell 14 cents to an average of $2.28. Toyota says it's delaying the launch of its new Corolla in North America until 2008 in order to maintain quality. The chief executive of Airbus resigned today, 3 months after he took the job. Airbus has announced a 2-year delay of its A380 Super Jumbo jet. Light sweet crude ended the trading day at $60 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold was $579.50 an ounce. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 8 points at 11,857. The NASDAQ was up 12 at 2311. The S&P 500 up 1 at 1350. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's Monday. The way things are shaking in the world, I don't know if we're going to make it to Tuesday, but it is daggum sure Monday. And I'm daggum sure Bob Kincaid, and I am, I can't tell you how happy I am to be with you. It was an interesting weekend. It was a fun weekend. Had some fun with the kids Saturday evening at Chili Night in Beckling. That's always Beckley's absolute best foot put forward. Just people hanging out, having fun in the streets, eating all kinds of different chili, and gosh, there was barbecue and pop and beer and old fashioned town block party, the kind of stuff that reminds a community that's been decimated by business losses, the loss of its downtown district to the mallization of America. That how cool it is, how wonderful it is to be on the streets with your neighbors and your friends. It was a real blast. But the next day, yesterday, Sunday, I spent puttering around toward the end of the evening. As I go through doing stuff, whatever, I'll stop for 5 minutes and check the headlines, and then, there it was. That crazy, crazy little man who, wears platform shoes and digs porno had ordered his minions in North Korea to blow up one of our nuclear bombs. And so I got my Google Earth out, and I looked, and I found the place. It's a mountainous region, as far as I can tell. And as I sat there and read it, and I read the United States is trying to determine whether or not they really did it. This is after there have been reports from all over the Asian Rim of seismic occurrences, anywhere from 3.6 to 4.5. Coupled with the statement, this isn't an earthquake. No, it wasn't an earthquake. It was a nuclear explosion. The question, then, is why? Well, let's see. I got it here. The answer, if you're a Republican, is, of course, very, very simple. I mean, it's a Republican doing it, so therefore it's a no-brainer. Here it is. Should have had it on the top of the stack, but, you know, other things happen too. From Right Wing World, the Clinton legacy, North Korea's bomb. Yep, Clinton's fault. Clinton did it. Did you know that Bill Clinton went personally to North Korea and, like John Henry, the steel-driving man, dug the hole for the bomb his own self? Yes, he did. He did. And Monica was standing right there. Now, never mind the fact that we staved off the day when, you know, the North Koreans would have a nuclear device by some 8 to 10 years by giving them some food instead of having them build bombs. The Clinton administration did that. Yep, it's Clinton's fault. North Korea. Hey, wait a minute, newscaster voice. Agnes, open your mic and give me the teletype noise, please. Thank you. North Korea's first detonation of a nuclear weapon may have taken place during the watch of George W. Bush, but it was under the Clinton administration's watch that the communist regime began gathering necessary materials and constructing the bomb. As Western powers raced to... I'm not done. No, I need more teletype. Yeah, the teletype just went on strike. As Western powers raced to confirm that North Korea did in fact explode a nuclear device in Kilju... you know, that ought to be ominous. They exploded this is another one of the funny things about... Not funny, there's nothing funny about it. You know, is this the part from Dr. Strangelove where we cue We'll Meet Again Some Sunny Day? The fools, the mad fools! I don't know if it's just a linguistic thing, but the initial reports of where the bomb had been tested said it was done in Kilju, North Korea. Oh, there's some irony. Well, by the time the mainstream press gets hold of it, they've changed Kilju to Gilju. As Western powers raced to confirm that North Korea did in fact explode a nuclear device in Gilju, a remote region in the Hamgyong province, some see it as a culmination of weak U.S. action during the 1990s that led to this fateful day. Oh, my aching back! Bill Clinton's fault. It's all Bill Clinton's fault. Every last blessed thing is Bill Clinton's fault. You know, your kid didn't bring home straight A's? Bill Clinton's fault. Stepped on a nail? Bill Clinton's fault. Bought the only pack, bought the only six pack of pop with a leaking can? Bill Clinton's fault. It's just, it's all Bill Clinton's fault. Kid got diddled by a Republican congressman? Bill Clinton's fault. I mean, this is, you know, maybe this is the part where we go back to the Flush Flimball quote, where he, my friends, what will we tell the children? After entering wait a minute. Where? Help me. Where did North Korea purchase the nuclear reactors? Sam's? No, close. They learned how to use all the stuff from a guy named A.Q. Khan. He's Pakistani. He's the guy that was operating, selling nuclear secrets to North Korea right under the Bush administration's nose. Yeah, that A.Q. Khan. But where'd the reactors come from? Anybody? Anybody? Hands in the audience? Where did the reactors come from? They came from an alphabet soup corporation, ABB or BAA, it's some technological outfit in Switzerland. Yeah, they really did. I guess, you know, when you want some light water reactors, you go to ABB. You know, the Swiss are good for that kind of thing. They did a lovely job banking stolen Jewish money during the Holocaust. And, hell, they didn't even have to start giving it back until about 5 or 10 years ago. Yeah, that kind of neutral I don't need. But apparently they make some really cool nuclear reactors. And that's okay. Well, no. But, you know, it's like any corporation, it has a board of directors. ABB does. And on that, and they're paid well. The board of, you know, even a guy who sits on the board of directors who doesn't vote. A non-executive member of the board of directors. So I guess he's not really non-voting. He's just, he doesn't have a regular day job. He's just there. He's there to make it look pretty. Even that guy, the non-executive members of the board of directors of this ABB, they make $185,000 a year for showing up. Really? Now, since it is Clinton's fault, right? Since it's Clinton's fault, who would you expect to be sitting on the board of ABB? Sandy Berger? Edward Kennedy? How about a real scary liberal? Or maybe Vernon Jordan. He was a friend of Bill, wasn't he? Maybe it was Vernon Jordan that voted in favor of selling nuclear reactors to the North Koreans. Could it be? Yeah. No. The director, that's all, folks. The director sitting on the board of ABB in Switzerland was none other than one Donald Rumsfeld. Okay? Donald Rumsfeld was on the directorate of the corporation that sold the nuclear reactors to North Korea. I mean, hell, they the minute that it was approved, they sent people to North Korea. They opened up an office there just across from Kim Il-sung's daddy's special super duper statue square, and went into the nuclear reactor business. Let's see, Mr. Rumsfeld there, I don't do a good Swiss accent. It's kind of hard to tell because some are sort of German, the others are sort of French. So I won't bore you with the accent, but it's Mr. Rumsfeld there, as a member of the board of directors of ABB. What do you think of selling a few nuclear reactors to crazy people in North Korea? Gee willikers, I think that'd just be a neato, groovy, keen kind of thing to do there, boss. That's right. All day long. Clinton's fault. Interview with Bill Richardson on CNN that I saw a little bit ago. The Wolfie. Former UN ambassador and energy secretary Bill Richardson. Why'd Bill Clinton do this? I mean, you know how. And, you know, Bill Richardson said, we kept it sane. We protected the several million people not too far south of the DMZ in Seoul. We protected the 38,000 American soldiers positioned along the DMZ because, you know, the war's not over. This was just a ceasefire, you understand. There was no, you know, there was no peace at the end of the Korean War. Those people fought Harry Truman and Douglas MacArthur to a standstill, and then we agreed that we'd just stop shooting. There's no peace. It's just a ceasefire. A couple of bullets and the ceasefire's over. So, Bill Richardson points out that it was actually a fairly sane strategy to contain Kim Jong-il. and to send fuel and food for the people. You know, because, you know, it's not like he and the party apparatchiks are going hungry in North Korea. Nah, it's people that work every day and scrape the dirt for their existence. They're the ones that are starving. You know, and let's stop this foolishness of, well, you know, it's a communist country. Nah, it's a fascist dictatorship. Please. You know, you see, if you took the two of them and sat them down in a room and didn't tell one or the other that, you know, who they were, George Bush and Kim Jong-il would get along just great. Here you got some dirty movies. What do you mean you've only got Betamax? Where do you live, Korea? North Korea? Oh, my. Yeah. These two people are out of the same mold. They're nuts. So today you're supposed to be terrified. Today it's, you know, we're all living, we're all living failsafe. Today we're all on the beach. And we're supposed to be waiting for that madman in North Korea to personally put a warhead on top of one of his goofy little missiles that he can't even get 30 miles out to sea and nuke Seattle! There's only one problem. He's not going to do it. He has no interest in doing it. For very valid reasons, the North Koreans have gone ahead and tried to prove to the United States that, yes, we've got a bomb. You know, they weren't proving it to the world. They weren't proving it to Pakistan. They weren't proving it to India. They weren't proving it to China. They were proving it to us. Because we have a madman in Washington, D.C., who has proven that he will attack another nation, even though that nation has not engaged in any provocation whatsoever. George Bush proved in March of 2003 that he was perfectly willing to slaughter thousands upon thousands upon thousands of innocent civilians to achieve an aim based on a lie. He's proven that. See, we don't know it because we don't have a real free press in the United States anymore. But the rest of the world looks at the United States as being a rogue nation. We're a nation that destroys its own countryside, blows up mountains. We're a nation that unlike the rest of the civilized world, still engages in the execution of, until recently, the mentally retarded and the children. We're a nation that responds to a hurricane that they had 3 days to prepare for, and a year later, people are still dropping dead. We have become the can't-do nation. We've become the nation that can't be trusted. So you know, while the rest of the news media is out there saying, "Wow, you know, Kim Jong-il exploded a nuclear device because he's crazy and chews his toenails," it is simply not true. Past practice by George W. Bush has shown the world that the only way to keep him from harming you is to prove to him that you can do harm back. Do you think I don't care what they say about, oh, yeah, we would have done it, you know, if we'd known it was going to be 2,745 dead Americans in 3 years, well, we'd have invaded Iraq anyway. No, we wouldn't have. No, we would not have. This administration, filled with crazy people, crazy cowards, though, mind you, I mean, there is some benefit in it. They are crazy cowards. Had they known that Iraq was going to turn out like they did, they wouldn't have invaded Iraq. Never in a million years would they have invaded Iraq. But they were sitting there reading battle plans compiled by $500,000 a year millionaire consultants that said we would be welcomed as liberators, that we would be welcomed, that they would strew flowers in our paths. So, because we perceived that Iraq could not possibly fight back against us, we attacked the people of Iraq. And you know what? Iran saw that, and Iran, you know, they're moving along with their nuclear program. They say they're not trying to develop a nuclear weapon. Do you believe them? I don't know. It was his first State of the Nation when George Bush said, "I want to tell you about the axle of evil. That would be Iraq, Iran, and North Korea." Now, up until that time, we had sort of North Korea, you know, in a little straitjacket in the rubber room with the purple crayon between its toes writing on the walls. Because there had been some dialogue between the Clinton administration and the North Korean fascist dictatorship. But at that moment, all bets were off, and all contact with the, you know, George Bush cut off all contact with the North Korean government, and our policy of isolation and containment there and in Iraq went out the window. So Iraq, North Korea ran, tore the seals off its nuclear program and said, there's a crazy man over there. He may do anything at any time now. You know, he might nuke us. So we've got to at least be able to fight back. We're not going to lay down, you know, and then they saw the abject example of Iraq sitting there. Oh, we're not going to threaten you, okay? We're not threatening anybody. We don't have any weapons of mass destruction. We don't have a chemical weapon. We ain't got nothing, okay? We got nothing here. Boom. Murder. So you tell me whether Kim Jong-il is crazy. Really, I want to know. Is he? Is he just nuts? Because if you stop and think about it, he may have exploded the only bomb he had. Odds are that that's not the case. But maybe. But he's probably got 6 or 7 or 8 of them. He certainly doesn't have enough to fight a nuclear war with anybody else on this planet. He couldn't fight a nuclear war with the Israelis. They got 100. He couldn't fight a nuclear war with France, Britain. No, mm-mm, couldn't do it. He certainly couldn't fight he's pretty close to, what peninsula, Vladivostok or whatever. He couldn't fight a nuclear war with the Russians. He can't fight a nuclear war with us. What other purpose is there in this man having, his government having nuclear weapons? Look, you know, there's an old saying about rattlesnakes. You know, it's the third guy that's always in trouble. The first guy spooks it, the second guy pisses it off, and the third guy gets bit. Well, Kim Jong-il is standing on the Korean Peninsula, Pyongyang, shaking the biggest rattle he's got. I'm here! Don't screw with me! George Bush. He's not telling Vladimir Putin not to screw with him. He's not telling Manmohan Singh not to screw with him. He's not telling Pervez Musharraf not to screw with him. Hell, Musharraf's government sold him half the technology. You see? This is a problem that comes home to roost at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, period. What a tragic place North Korea must be. What, 3,000 3,000 people a day, 3,000 people a week dying from starvation? Can you imagine? And they've used what capital they have to build bombs instead of to churn butter. Now that's enough to tell you that Kim Jong-il is a dirty, rotten, little, mean-spirited, fascist thug. I don't want anybody to get me wrong. He's a creep. He's not good company. He's not a good neighbor. He's nobody you'd want to live across the street from. That's why I say he'd get along very well with George Bush. Same kind of guy. I'm just trying to look at this dispassionately. I'm not going to give you the USA, 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 and go burn some Dixie Chicks albums. Or, no, I'm not going to do that. We engage in reason here. We engage in common sense. We engage in thoughtful intro and extrospection. And so for me to sit here and say, well, you know, they developed a nuclear weapon because Bill Clinton wanted them to, and they're just crazy. I'm not going to do that. Tell you what, let's go to the phones. David joins us from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. In other news, lettuce was recalled again.
Yeah, I know. They took my spinach now. Well, yeah.
You know, the thing about Kim Jong-il is that I believe he is insane, and he is crazy, and he's obsessed with our movies, and I don't know if you've seen some of the quotes of the letters he sent when he kidnapped that woman from South Korea. But, yeah, he's a little off his rocker. But the thing is he doesn't
Not unusual in a world leader.
Yeah, but what's unusual about him is the fact of how outright he is obsessed. He went to the point of kidnapping someone to make a movie. That's a different extreme you're dealing with. And the other thing about the North Korea thing that I found funny was 2 or 3 months later, they have a successful nuke test. When 2 months before, their missile test couldn't even hit off the ground. Okay.
So that means they're going to have to FedEx the bomb.
No. But, I mean, what's funny about it is it's like, okay, so you had a nuke test. And we're like, yes, we had a nuke test. Can you show us the data? No. So it could be TNT. They even say it in the news release on the wire. It could be explosives.
Well, I tell you what, David. It would be to our advantage not to try to find out.
Oh, I'm sure. I agree with you completely, and
you know the rattlesnake that shakes its rattle at you may not have any fangs left anymore, but you're not going to find out until it gets its mouth open.
I'm telling you, I don't think the American people really care about North Korea, so I really don't know how the Republicans are going to spin this one. They care about it to an extent, but North Korea is like. I don't know. It's like Bulgaria or something to that. Isn't that guy with the Elvis hair?
Yeah, no. He's a funny looking little dude.
Yeah.
And you know his father was creepy too. But by the same token, David, do you see what I'm getting at? This guy doesn't want one of these like he wants, you know, a new Super 8 projector for his really old dirty movies, okay?
Right.
He wants this because he and a lot of the rest of the world cannot trust George Bush to do the sane thing. Because invading Iraq was insane.
Invading Iran is going to be insane.
Invading Iran is going to be super crazy. But, you know, that's the mark of the insane is that they continue to do insane things. They don't suddenly get well.
You know, Hartman was on the program today, and he was talking about how there's an article, I forget what it's about, but about how Bush was just furious inside the White House that everything's coming out and everything's crumbling and the Republicans and just basically everything is not going his way. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense because you look at Cheney. Here's another guy who calls up Woodward and curses him out. I don't know if you saw that one.
Yeah.
And then you look at Condi Rice, and she's so much in denial. The lights go out during her visit, and she's sitting in the dark, and she still wants to say Iraq and Baghdad are completely stable and we have it under control.
Yeah, missed that whole poisoning story, didn't she?
Yeah, and, you know... And when you look at the North Korea situation, the more people keep pounding it, the more someone's going to, you know, want to launch an attack on North Korea if they keep pressuring the other Asian countries to just be, should we do it? Should we do it? Should we do it? I mean, the way the press is working in North Korea thing, it's a dangerous fine line in my opinion.
I know. But by the same token, what you do is you talk to the guy. Do you understand right now? And I'm not demeaning. I hope you understand.
Right.
But right now, we're not even willing to sit down face to face with the North Koreans. Ah, they got to come. They got to come to the six nation cocktail party.
You know what you do, Bob? You buy off his son with Eric Clapton tickets because he's an Eric Clapton. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'd seen that somewhere. What is Korean for Clapton is God?
Yeah. And he actually, I don't know how many concerts he goes a year, but this is his big obsession with Clapton. So you somehow maybe get a private meeting with him to get him to meet Clapton or something. I don't know. I mean, you do favors like that. The problem with this administration is there's such they live in such denial and hypocrites of the people they think are righteous, even though what the people they're working with they're doing is wrong, and they're so confused with logic and perception that immediately when they see someone that they don't like, who they don't agree with, like you have that press conference where Bush goes, "No, not gonna meet with him."
Yeah.
He acted like a kid. No. No, no.
Okay,
no, no.
Okay. So you're sane, David. I'm sane.
Right.
What do you?
I'm saying in private, you have to.
No. You're sane. I'm sane. What do you do publicly?
Publicly, you have to open your hand and say, "Hey, it's like how you handle a wild animal. You say it's okay. I understand." I understand you're a little man in a box country. We get that. But you like America, right? I can bring Quentin Tarantino right now. Quentin, come on in.
I'll kidnap him.
I mean, Quentin, you know what? Quentin's crazy enough. He'd be like, all right. Oh, can I make a movie with Kim Jong-il? All right, man. All right, here's what you do. And
you do a pretty good. You do a pretty good Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way the guy is. He takes these extremes of things that you don't want to see, and you're like, okay, Quentin, I get it, I understand the blood, the spray, the cut off the ear, okay, I get it. But I mean, he would be into visiting Kim Jong Il. He'd want to film it.
The only problem is, the Bush administration won't let anybody talk to Kim Jong Il. Because you paid the ticket, you may as well take the ride, David. You got to understand, this is not about relieving this crisis. If George Bush had been embroiled in the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis, if that was him instead of Kennedy, we'd be cockroaches, okay? Because the world would be a cinder. George Bush doesn't want to talk to anybody. George Bush doesn't want peace. George Bush wants tension and fear and hostility. Right now, David, you are supposed to be so doggone scared that you're afraid to pick up the telephone and call this program because you're absolutely sure that Maine is going to get nuked by North Korea.
Well,
it's going to come right over the ice cap.
You know, in some ways, I think reality TV and all the other distractions kind of help that. Oh, my God, this is scary. Can you imagine if we lived in the 60s or the 50s with no internet? We had George Bush as president.
Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah, the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Can you, exactly. I mean, you know, just stop. You've got an appreciation of the history of it, I imagine.
Right.
Just stop for a minute and try to, instead of the cabinet that John Kennedy had in 1962, try to imagine George Bush, Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, Condi Rice, John Bolton, and that whole loony, evil, crazy, insane crowd trying not to have a nuclear war with somebody who can smack back. Try to imagine that. You cannot get to the point where the missiles don't fly.
Imagine that you can't show a film about Bush's assassination in the theaters to see what it was like. All of the major chains refused it.
I know.
And it's not even negative. What it does is it takes off. Like, if you want that fantasy, then Cheney becomes president. And this is what happens.
The world is upside down, David. Pure and simple.
Speaking of upside down, did you see that video I sent you of Bill Kristol?
Yeah.
Crazy, isn't it?
They all are. I mean, you know, really, crazy.
Did you check what Alex said? One of the two of the people who came there to ambush Crystal, they said something like, "Well, surprisingly, the left wasn't there." And then Alex Jones jumps in and goes, "Yeah, because you know, they have to look out for their former Trotskyite associates." I was like, "Oh my God!"
It's getting a little. Our joints are getting a little loose.
I mean,
It's getting a little creepy, a little bit wobbly in America, because if a bomb's going to go off somewhere, it will go off as a direct and proximate result of the actions of George W. Bush.
And, you know, everybody should keep paying attention how every American who holds a hostage or anything is not a terrorist. He's a gunman.
The gunman, yeah.
They're not going to say it because then they have to say they're fighting them over there so we don't fight them over here. That wouldn't work. They point them out. Well, you got terrorists here.
Yeah, what's the dude in Nickel Mine, Pennsylvania? He's a terrorist.
Right.
He's a domestic
terrorist, exactly.
The crazy dude in Colorado that he copycatted from the week before, that's a terrorist.
But he's a gunman. See, but this is a funny thing.
No, I understand he's a gunman.
But I know. But a farmer in Iraq, if he holds up a pitchfork, or if he holds up a gun, an ancient, antique Civil War gun, he's considered a terrorist, gunman.
He's a terrorist. Oh, you know, one of these days, I hope I'm trying to get George Lakoff on the program. And I want to talk about all these things. And I think we're going to have a really, really fun time in the process.
You know, they actually had Steve Howard on from the guy who said on Hartman, who said to Cheney, "I think your crimes are reprehensible."
Yeah, and got arrested for it.
Mm. Right, and he said, this is crazy, they arrested him in front of their 9-year-old son.
Yeah.
And
the Secret Service arrested him, put him into the custody of the local cops,
right,
and told the local cops to file charges. The local cops looked at it and said, "Well, okay, we'll arrest him, but
I really hope he could."
You know, as soon as you guys are out of town, we're dismissing the charges. This is foolish. This is stupid.
He did the right thing, and I think it's good that on the program he was explaining how he's going after the Secret Service agent and not the vice president. And he did the right thing, because what he's doing is he's pressuring and he's boxing that service agent, and he's saying, "Okay, now they have to stand up for what they did was a whatever offense it would be. I don't know, but I would think he would get something out of it.
False arrest. He'll probably get some sort of a little payoff just to go and be quiet.
I hope he doesn't take the money. He should keep.
Well, the lawyer's doing it for the money. Trust me, okay?
Yeah.
The lawyer's doing it for the money. He's not going to do it because it does. No, there's got to be some money to be had somewhere, so the lawyer can make his fee.
But doesn't
so if
the
there's
client,
a, if there's a settlement offered, he will tell his client take but, the settlement.
But doesn't the client have a say in it and say no? I want to keep going with this.
Yeah, he does have a say in it, but in the long run, the lawyer will win that argument.
Yeah, I can see how that would happen.
Yeah. Because trials are extremely expensive, and you know, at best you get in front of a jury in Colorado, and you're going to win. Not so much. Hey, David, I got to roll on, but it's awfully good talking to you. And yeah, the video was a dandy.
Yeah, you should put it up on your blog so people can see it.
Yeah, I may try to do that.
And everybody watch Charlie Rose tonight because they're going to talk about the North Korea situation.
Okay, cool. Take it easy, David. Bye now.
Bye.
And onward to Lee in North Carolina. Hey, Lee, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
I'm all right. I'm not terrified like I'm supposed to be.
Oh, no, I never was terrified. I'm terrified of George Bush.
Yeah.
But, you know, the administration's propaganda machine is so good that they even have liberals thinking that Ahmadinejad of Iran and Kim Jong-il of Korea are crazy. Those guys are not crazy.
I don't think so.
Kim may be a little eccentric. He's not crazy. Both of them have the most sane response to George Bush that I can think of. I mean, you got a guy that a few weeks before he attacked Iraq, I think they found some little tiddly missiles that went 5 miles or so further than they were supposed to. George Bush demanded that Saddam Hussein destroy his missiles. He demanded that Saddam Hussein disarm. That man disarmed. He destroyed his missile, and then Bush attacked him. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, well, you know, that's
yourself,
what...
Throw out your guns and then attack you.
Well, that's, you know, that's what the thug does in the alley. You know, drop your weapon. Okay, bang, you're dead.
Yeah. There's only one insane ruler on this planet that I know of right now, and that is George W. Bush. And unfortunately, about 30% of the American population is just as insane as he is.
Well,
but I can't believe it. I really cannot believe it. They trump it out. Oh, these guys are crazy. They're insane. They want to kill us. They're not insane. They're exhibiting the same type of reaction that I would have if somebody were to come to my house and say, I've got a shotgun. You can't have one. You know?
Well, yeah, exactly.
I would say, okay,
there's
then
some,
I would start trying to get a shotgun.
Yeah, there's some line out there that says self-preservation is the first law of nature.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, if you how can you look at it any other way, Lee? They've seen that if you try to deal with the Bush administration, you get dead.
Well,
if you bristle and threaten, however, they back down. And it's been, and we tend to forget, Lee, that it's been that way since the Bush administration came to power with the whole Chinese spy plane. I'll apologize once. Was that not good enough? Here, let me apologize 15 more times. You remember that?
Oh,
We've forgotten it almost.
But, you know, the Bush administration deals with our Congress in the exact same way. They just bully them. And then they roll over, especially the Democrats. They roll over, they say, well, you know, if we give him this, well, maybe he won't do anything. And then he jumps on them again. I mean, these guys come out and some of them even sign up for his torture bill. Because they're thinking that if they don't, the Republicans will use it against them in the election.
What happened
the very next day after they signed off on the bill, the Republicans came out and accused them of trying to appease the terrorists. They came out saying that they want to give terrorists the same rights as Americans or whatever. No matter what you do, they're going to attack you.
Because they're bullies, and it's what bullies do. Until
and it's exactly what I've been saying, you know, all along. They're like snakes. It's what they do. That's what they do. Don't blame them. It's in their nature.
Yeah, you and me with the snakes tonight. I'm working the rattlesnakes. You're working the snakes in general. I think we're onto something, Lee.
Yeah.
But they are. And the fact of the matter is, we know this. We know what they are. We know how they, and that's why we react the way we do. But I on the little post on the website, you know, it's October. Are you surprised? You know, a trick or treat.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
I don't even know that this is the October surprise.
You know, I think maybe the October surprise was Foley. I mean, I really think that Karl Rove, as devious as he is, may have really, you know, tried to play the homosexual card. And I think it backfired on him.
Well, that may be it. Right now, they're wishing they'd never heard the name Mark Foley.
I know.
Of course, I've got I read a blog posting today from over at Huffington Post from someone talking about their experience. Well, this is a writer by the name of Jason Fishbein, and he's a Republican consultant, and Mark Foley was a gay pro-choice Republican with a solid history of defending children. But his popularity was limited to South Florida. That was largely because it was fairly well known that he was gay. It was certainly no secret. Blah, 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 blah. You know, so, again, they persist in this business of trying to paint up gay people as sexual predators.
Right, and it's entirely, it's a totally different thing.
98% of sex abusers, child sex abusers, are heterosexual men. It's that simple.
Yeah.
So
what do you think about all of the, and it's coming out now that there's a lot of them. What do you think about all of the members of the Republican Party that are homosexual? I mean, it's amazing to me that you have these aides and even congressmen that are working for the party.
Well, it's
homosexual for a party that would like to kill them.
Yeah.
I mean, what does that say about them?
Well, the closet does terrible things to the mind, if I understand correctly. I mean, it'll twist you seven different ways from Sunday.
Yeah. Well,
it'll make you a fraud within a fraud within a fraud. Now, I have a feeling that there's going to be a log closet door swing open, and we're going to find out about a whole bunch of gay Republicans.
Yeah, it's a crowded log cabin.
Yeah,
it's a very crowded log cabin. But what kind of, I mean, what can go on in their mind? You know, I'm not homosexual, but I'm African American. I can't understand a person like Clarence Thomas or J.C. Watt. The Republican Party has no use for African Americans.
No, none.
How can you? I mean, how could you ever support them for anything?
Well, you know, J.C. Watts' dad is a Baptist minister, and a good one at that, if I understand correctly. And it was he who told, I think it was Esquire magazine, they asked him, you know, will you vote for your son? And he said, I saw that. Yeah, he said, black man voting for Republicans like the chicken voting for Colonel Sanders.
You know what it does to your mind eventually, and again, I'm going with the replacing gay with African American thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it does to your mind? Being in the closet as a gay is just like being an African American. And you know what happens when you like that? You turn into Michael Jackson. You're really screwed up.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Jackson is he's a self-hater. And it's just gotten to the point where it's sad.
How bad?
That's what happens to the mind.
Exactly. It eats your mind alive. There was a significant portion of the African American community who stayed home during the civil rights era.
And they
knew they were doing the wrong thing.
Well, you know, there was a significant portion of the African American society that actually supported the South during the Civil War.
Sure. And you know, there's the famous debate between who was it, W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington.
Yeah.
Booker T. Washington wanted to be deferential toward white society, but try to build up African American culture within the United States. And W.E.B. Du Bois said, "No, full equality, or because anything short of full equality is no equality."
Yeah,
and that's where poetry like that of Langston Hughes comes along and says, you know, justice deferred is justice denied.
Well, you know,
and what happens to a dream deferred, right?
I can see where you're coming from there, but that was the type of discussion that was really, you know, both sides had the same aim. They just they just differed on how to.
It differed in method.
Yeah, in method, you know, and I really can't say which one was right or wrong.
But what happens with gay Republicans and. What they realize is if they come out, the party dies. It simply dies, Lee, because, you know, Mark Foley, for instance, you know, this article here talking, you know, Mark Foley was a gay, pro-choice Republican with a solid history of defending children. Well, okay, he also voted in favor of the Defense of Marriage Amendment.
Yeah.
You know, he literally put a shiv between the ribs of millions of gay Americans, you know, who don't live in bathhouses or engage in promiscuous sex like the right wing tries to paint them. You know, that was done to the African American community too.
Mm-hmm.
The sex angle. And
oh yeah, that was a big angle, yeah.
Sure. And
all we wanted was white women.
Well, look, poor Emmett Till wound up at the bottom of the river with a cotton gin fan around his neck because he looked at a white woman. Because the bigoted racist mindset says that it's all about sex. You know, so you know these people are acting against the best interests of the people who are sharing their agony. You know, I mean, I get, you know, maybe to be in the closet and be in Congress is not so bad because Congress will mostly keep its own secrets. Well, you know, Congressman Foley's gay. Well, yeah, but and it's an agreement on both sides. You don't out ours, and we won't out yours.
Yeah,
out them all.
The log cabin Republicans and the Republicans that are, you know, the homosexual Republicans.
Yeah.
And the Clarence Thomases and J.C. Watts's. And they've got a lot of African Americans on TV now that they kind of drag out on Fox News and they interview.
Yeah.
All of those guys are basically selfish. I can't understand them. I truly cannot understand them.
Well, you know,
I'm retired now, but I made a lot of money, and I made the type of money where George Bush's tax cuts could probably benefit from them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but well, I still got family that wouldn't. I've still got friends that wouldn't. I've got a whole community that wouldn't. You know, what's the, if you're to the point where you're comfortable, how can you look around and say you would actually damage your people or damage your group or damage other gays or other African Americans? How could you say you could damage anybody when you're comfortable yourself? I could never understand it.
Right, well, that's something you can only refer to as a genuine character flaw, Lee. I mean, that's like a psychological character flaw where you don't give a damn about your fellow human being. All you're out for is yourself. And it also fits nicely into the Republican platform. If you can get your mind to that place, there is an entire political party that will tell you that you are a good person and not a bad one for thinking that way. Because, you know, black, white, gay, straight, the Republican Party exists to promote, I get fancy and academic about it, to promote oligarchy. You know, if you're rich and black, that's cool. If you're rich and white, that's cool too. If you're rich and Native American, works for them as long as you're rich.
Long as you're rich.
Because the real color, you know, there's no colorblind society in the Republican Party to the extent that the color that matters to them is federal green.
It's green. And as a matter of fact, they really don't have a philosophy. They deep in the Republican Party, they don't have anything against gays. They don't have anything against African Americans. They don't have anything against immigrants. They're thinking about money.
Their whole bias is against poor people.
Yes, but you know the reason that they're against poor people. Well, the reason that they're against African Americans and gays and immigrants and everything has nothing to do with philosophy. They're against them because their face is against them, and they have to hold on to their face.
Right. I mean, that's,
they don't give a whit about their base. They just want the vote of the base.
Because power and money are the final analysis and the final arbiters of success and quality of life to them. If it weren't for the god awful things that they do, Lee, you could actually sit down after about 15 minutes and start feeling really sorry for these people. What vacuous, hollow, miserable lives they must lead. Because you know, the only way they can measure any value in their entire world is by money.
material thing.
You know, but they're not going to bury the 6 foot diagonal Mitsubishi widescreen TV with them.
But it goes further than that. I like money just like anybody else.
Well, sure.
My God, how much money can you use? I mean, these guys are in the they're in the mode of just collecting everything.
Now, if you turned me loose with a whole bunch of money, I could have a whale of a good time with it. But that's you and me, Lee, as compared to these people. They don't, and see, that's the thing. They value the money for the money's sake. They don't value the money for what it can do. I will never be a rich man because I like what money can do. I like a new car once in a while. I like a better house. I like nice clothing. I like going out to eat in nice restaurants. I can't hang on to money because it's
too much fun
using it.
I'm like that.
But
and
these
I can't use 12 new cars.
No.
Okay.
You know, maybe Jay Leno can. I can only drive one at a time. And if I had as many cars as Jay Leno has, I'd sit there and have a nervous breakdown every day trying to figure out which one to drive. I mean, it's bad enough having to choose between two. But that, you know, there's a psychosis involved in all that, Lee.
But you know what? One thing that sets us apart is that I like money.
Mm-hmm.
But if it came to buying that third brand new car, which I really don't need, and watching a kid starve in an alley, I would give up the car and give the money to the kid.
Well, sure. It's the difference.
The average Republican wouldn't.
No, probably not. And the classic case in point, we've got a guy in this state named Jack Whitaker. He won a $357 million Powerball jackpot.
Wow.
Republican as the day is long. And 2 years later, his marriage is on the rocks. He's been busted in strip clubs four or five times. His granddaughter and her boyfriend are dead.
From
being turned loose with the money.
Oh, okay.
You know, she turned into a meth and crackhead. You know, she had a brand new Toyota. What's the top of the line SUV? You know what I'm talking about.
I don't.
But you know, everything she could possibly, everything she could possibly want, she got, and she died, and you know, she died absolutely alone and scared to death from either meth or crack. And you know, on the other hand, you and me, we sit around with, you know, if I won that Powerball, and pretty soon you run out of stuff to do with it, and you start thinking about the good you could do with it.
And you still got $300 million left.
Right. Exactly. And that would, you know, that would be fun. That would be challenging. Who can I do good for today?
Hey, pass it on to your offspring. Well, you know,
Set them up a trust fund for a million or so, but if they can't get by in this world on $1 million.
Yeah, the estate tax, they can, you know, you can give them $3 million.
Yeah.
If they can't get by on $3 million, then I'm sorry.
Then you failed in the first place.
That's right.
Exactly. Lee, No, go ahead.
I said, not only did I give you a slight head start, but, you know, I let you take off 2 inches from the finish line, and you still couldn't make it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm going to let you go. I have some computer skills and some other skills that, you know, if you're interested, once I get off, if Agnes is still there, I'll let her know.
Okay, sounds good. We'll put you back on hold.
All right.
Thanks, Lee. Take care.
All right.
And it's time for the news when we come back. Your phone calls and quite possibly a call from our good friend Brad Friedman. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. North Korea's nuclear weapons test sparked a meeting of the UN Security Council today. The 15-nation council quickly issued a unanimous resolution to condemn North Korea. The U.S. says it will seek sanctions against North Korea. The U.S. may also seek international inspections to check for weapons and cargo entering and leaving North Korea. America is also lobbying for a trade ban on military and luxury items. The U.N. Security Council has unanimously nominated South Korea's Foreign Minister Ban Ki-moon to be the next U.N. Secretary General. He still must be confirmed by the General Assembly. In Baghdad today, the brother of Iraq's vice president was assassinated. 13 other people were killed after a car bomb went off in a busy marketplace. 46 were wounded. In the Anbar province, 3 Marines were killed yesterday. That brings to 32 the number of U.S. forces killed in Iraq in the last 9 days. South of Baghdad yesterday, as many as 400 Iraqi policemen were poisoned after eating a meal. The poisoning is under investigation, and several mess hall cooks are under arrest. The Miami Herald reports the Navy attorney who challenged the Bush administration's policy for Guantanamo Bay prisoners is being forced out of the military. The lieutenant commander was told he had been passed over for promotion 2 weeks after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in his favor and against the White House. The military demands upper-level officers resign if they are not promoted. In Mexico, the country's foreign secretary says he is considering taking Mexico's problems with the 700-mile U.S. fence proposed for its border to the U.N. Financing for the fence was approved in Congress last week. Another recall from California's Salinas Valley, this time for lettuce packaged under the Foxy brand. The lettuce was available in early October in 7 western states. The company says the lettuce may have been irrigated by water contaminated with E. coli. No illnesses have been yet reported. Also recalled, bottled carrot juice thought to be contaminated with botulism. At least 3 people have fallen ill. The carrot juice is sold under the labels Earthbound Farms, Bolt House, and President's Choice. On the first anniversary of the Pakistani earthquake that killed 73,000 people, the U.S. says it will train 30,000 teachers and build 50 schools in the quake zone. 2/3 of the schools and colleges there were destroyed. Nearly 900 teachers were killed. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce...
No, you've got a great deal. Go online to RightCarRightPrice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to RightCarRightPrice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A new species of brilliantly colored brush finch has been discovered in the Andean cloud forest. Its discovery has prompted the Colombian government to set aside a 500-acre pristine forest as a national park. Today, Google bought YouTube for $1.65 billion in stock. The acquisition came just hours after YouTube announced deals with CBS and 2 major music labels. The popular video-sharing site is attempting to avoid copyright infringement lawsuits. OPEC ministers are expected to formally announce tomorrow they're removing 1 million barrels of crude oil a day from the market, which they say is oversupplied. In the past 2 weeks, the average price for a gallon of unleaded gasoline fell 14 cents to an average of $2.28. Prices are now 75 cents less than at their highest in August. Toyota says it's delaying the launch of its new Corolla in North America until 2008 in order to maintain quality. The chief executive of Airbus resigned today, 3 months after he took the job. Airbus has announced a 2-year delay of its A380 Super Jumbo jet. Light sweet crude ended the trading day today at $60 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange, and at the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 8 points at 11,857, NASDAQ up 12 at 2311, the S&P 500 was up 1 at 1350. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
right back at it. We are about 9 minutes after the hour. I'm Bob. And you know, I don't want to overplay the North Korean nuclear thing. More than anything, I'd like to, as is so often the case with these dummied up issues, I've succeeded if I can bring to the fore the idea that it is another con. It's another conservative con job. And we'll check out what Dear Leader had to say about things here in just a minute. But what it boils down to is, you know, we're gonna make sure that they don't transfer it, any nuclear technology to rogue regimes or terrorist organizations. That's a bunch of hooey too. He doesn't have enough to share. He's got to have enough to do whomever he needs to do, and frankly, he doesn't right now. I have no doubt that he perceives this as a self-defensive move. And by the way, I do not offer this as any kind of fact, but a simple question. I have read in a couple of different places now that the new UN Secretary General is, and you know, is it just because the name is the same? I don't know. But the new UN Secretary General is kinfolk to Sun Myung-moon. Has anybody fleshed that out? Because that would just be too weird for words. And it would also make a whole lot of sense. Creepy, scary sense, but it would make sense. Let's go to the phones. Susan is with us, calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
I've been listening to this whole Foley thing for however long it's been running, and there's one thing that's just been really, really bugging me.
Okay.
I have a cousin who is gay.
All right.
Also a monk.
A gay monk?
Yeah. Most religious, nicest person you ever wanted to meet.
Sure.
Anyway.
I'm guessing he doesn't get to be out as a monk.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. His bishop has no problem with it. He's an Episcopal monk.
Ah, okay. There we go. I didn't know the Episcopals had monks.
I didn't either until he told me. Thing is, they keep referring to Foley and people like him as gay. Horse pucky. He's a pervert. He's a pedophile. He is not gay.
Well, see, that may be the one thing we have to sort out, Susan, at least from a legal standpoint.
Somebody who goes out and diddles little boys is a pervert. He's not homosexual. He's not gay. My cousin is gay. He's never gone off after.
That is absolutely true. That's absolutely true. The question is one, and it's a technical question, and it's one of age. Now, if Foley was running around, offering kids a Snicker, you know, a little boy a Snicker and a Coke to come back behind the dumpster, there's no question.
Well, it's like me calling, okay, I know you are heterosexual because I know you are heterosexual because you're married to Agnes. Therefore, you are a rapist.
Yeah.
That is just as much as a stupid generalization, and it's offensive.
It's very, yes. I've tried to warn against this in the past mm-hmm. few programs. This is going to be used as an excuse for some of the ugliest gay bashing that we've seen in a long time. Did you see that Reverend Dobson finally heard about all this? It was a joke.
I try to avoid what he says because I know it's going to be really, really, really ugly.
Well, it was because he said this was a joke. Foleygate is a joke, Susan.
Oh, yeah, that. he said it was a prank by the.
The little hormone infested boys were pranking Congressman Foley.
Can I get my brother and take him out to a dark alley someplace? I've got three brothers who don't like Godzilla.
No, don't do it because, frankly, he'd enjoy it.
Probably would.
I forget who it was that pointed out today that Dobson. I used to think it was pretty sick that he advised parents to beat their children until they cried real tears.
Yeah, well, he's a sadist.
Right. Well, it turns out that in doing his so-called research, this PhD psychologist, Susan, in order to do his research on parenting and punishing, corporal punishment of children, he beat a dog.
Oh, good grief. That's what
we're dealing with here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting to the point where I am much less concerned about Foley's own conduct. Than the people trying to cover it up, and the people trying to make excuses for it.
Because they're sicker than he is.
Here's Michael Savage saying that the kid was a Democrat. When it turns out there were multiple boys.
Yeah.
But, the young man was a Democrat. That's why this happened. But if you, night after, I am sure, he's on 4 to 7, he's on 4 to 7 p.m., he's on right now, live, Savage is. And I guarantee you, as sure as God made little green apples with worms in them, Susan, he is urging us to nuke North Korea now.
Well, as far as North Korea is concerned, I'm sure Kim Jong-il will get his either in this life or the next. As far as Iran and its possible nuclear program, do you know what I would do if I was Iran, knowing what is coming down the pike at me?
Build them as fast as I can.
I would buy me a Pacific Atoll. And then go out and buy me, if I didn't have a bomb, I'd buy one. And I would set it off on that apple,
mm-hmm.
I would get me another bomb and say, okay, here is a really dirty bomb. It is set to go off on these oil fields the minute you invade. You want oil? Try contaminated oil.
See if you can burn radioactive petroleum. Sure.
That would stop all invasion plans because Bush can't use contaminated oil. Because that's what he's after. He's after his oil.
Well, sure he is. Sure he is, because it's the control of Middle Eastern oil. I've made this argument in the past. It's the control of the Middle Eastern oil. And it's not the control of Middle Eastern oil to us. And we get a relatively small amount of our imported oil from the Middle East. Most of our imported oil comes from Mexico, Venezuela, and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, if George Bush and his evil little cabal can control the Middle Eastern, as long as they've got their hand on the handle, on the spigot, and they're controlling the oil that's going to India and China, then they continue to rule the world.
Yeah, but in a way, I really don't think they honestly need to. If George Bush is silly enough to invade Iran, he's going to pull back a bloody stump. The United States Army, as it is configured right now, and I used to have a American-Iranian friend. Their family had fled the Shah, but they knew what it was like in Iran. There's no way they can take on that army.
No, and that's why the thing is currently planned as a strictly bombs and missiles affair. Suddenly the Clinton administration's strategy for dealing with Kosovo doesn't look quite as do you remember when all the Republicans hollered, well, we can never finish the job in Kosovo without boots on the ground? Remember that?
Right.
Well, we did. We did finish the job, and no, we didn't have to invade Kosovo. We didn't have to invade Serbia, Yugoslavia, whatever. We were completely successful.
Right. In that case, if I were Iran, then I would pull the nuclear stunt, say, well, if we can't have the oil, well, then nobody's going to.
Right.
And see how fast that was. Oh, and one more thing before I run. The standard Clinton thing?
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'm fat, therefore it's Clinton's fault that I was born with faulty genes that gave me a metabolic disorder. So there.
Oh, okay. You know, I stubbed my toe during the news break.
It's Clinton's fault.
Well, yeah. In fact, I'm trying really hard. Instead of saying some dirty word that I don't want my my kids to hear, I just yell Clinton now whenever something bad happens. Clinton. I mean, that's what the Republicans say we should do, because it is. Everything is Clinton's fault.
Yeah, oh, Lord.
You know, the next bad movie, Clinton's fault. You know, it's them Hollywood liberals. God, I loathe them. I loathe them, Susan. They make my eyeballs hurt. They make my hair hurt.
I don't know. There has got to be a payment for these people. I'm sincerely hoping it's going to be in this life, but I have a feeling it's going to be in the next life or the one after that. Somewhere down the line, they are going to be so miserable, and they won't understand why.
See, but doesn't that kind of miss the point, the not understanding why?
Not really, not if it's karma.
Because see, I'm a reincarnated pharaoh myself. I love peeled grapes, Susan. I just hate peeling them myself.
No, you're a reincarnated Roman.
Susan, have a wonderful evening. Okay.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye now.
And with us, joining us now, our very good friend, Brad Friedman, he of the bradblog.com. Brad, are you there?
I am here, Bob. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well. How about you?
Oh, a little bit busy this time of year for some odd reason.
Well, you know, I haven't since I've known you, and it's been a couple of years now, I haven't found the time of year when you aren't.
Well, you know, you make a good point, and I keep thinking things have got to calm down any minute.
They don't.
But they don't. They get worse. And then, of course, you know, the stuff I report on at bradblog.com means that when we get closer and closer to these elections, oh, man, things just really start to go nuts, and particularly this year for some odd reason.
It is getting weirder by the moment.
It is indeed.
In the middle of your electoral reporting, and you know, I feel confident, Brad, in saying that if I want to know what's going down, you're where I go, because it's the best overall collection of information about voting irregularities, improper voting regulation, anywhere in this country, period, bar none. But you also cover other stuff.
I do,
and you're taking an interesting tack with regard to the Korean nuclear revelation today, and that, you know, that's why I bugged you. That's why I asked you to come on and talk about it for a minute. You're urging liberals like myself and moderates and Democrats in general to be measured in their tone and measured in their approach of how we go about dealing with this. Could you flesh that out a little bit, please?
Well, yeah. I've said it at Bradblog for a long time. I've used the sort of the joking line that we've got your news agenda right here. And that's because, you know, I don't follow the news agenda as it is put out by the White House. And the fact of the matter is, most of the mainstream corporate media, and in fact, many of the progressive bloggers and progressive radio and so forth, actually does seem to take their assignments from the White House.
Guilty as charged.
Well, and it's, you know, so you're not alone. Even the corporate media is not alone. Progressives and Democrats just, you know, seem to use the White House as an assignment desk. It isn't. We don't have to cover their issue of the day. And Democrats, progressives don't have to respond to everything that the White House puts out, because essentially, as you know, they're doing anything and everything they can to manage the news. And the news has not been good for the White House lately. Now, yes, what happened in North Korea is of note, and it should be noted, and it should have been noted about, oh, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years ago, since
precisely,
the administration has been ignoring it. So for now, all of a sudden, for them to, you know, become outraged and indignant about this latest chapter is no real surprise. But for Democrats and progressives to play along with it, set all of the other news aside, clear the deck, so to speak, to go wall-to-wall North Korea, I mean, heck, we'd expect that of Fox News. But it would be nice if progressive bloggers, radio hosts, and even you know, the media who isn't Fox News didn't play along with that once in a while. Report it for what it is and move on. And that's because the fact of the matter is, whenever anyone is talking about that, responding to it, even if they're going out and saying, oh, Bush should have done something earlier, this and that, you know, essentially, that's their agenda. That works real well for the bad guys, because all of a sudden, that's what we're talking about, you know, instead of the Iraq war or the corruption scandals or the torture bill or the Mark Foley scandal, which is, you know, still taking down the entire house, it would seem.
It is kind of a beautiful thing to watch, isn't it?
Well, it's quite a mess. I mean, they are imploding, and you really you gird them up and you give them support when you deign to give legitimacy to the you know, to the topic of the day from the White House.
Well, and
that's march by their drummer. And, you know, to that end, this is one of the reasons why you were talking about the election e-voting coverage and everything else that I do over at Bradblog. It's one of the reasons why it hasn't been covered up until now, because, you know, there, that is an important issue. That underscores our entire democracy, not whether, you know, Terry Schiavo is going to get her feeding tube pulled or not.
Right. I couldn't agree more. That's, I mean, and that's the approach that I took with the nuclear thing this evening, Brad, is to try to take time to point out the fact that this is a phony, this is a fraud, this is fake, this is as ginned up as any one issue can be, because there is no way in heaven or hell or anywhere in between that Kim Jong-il is going to use his one or two or three or dozen nuclear devices in a first strike capacity. Therefore, that means that everything that comes out of the White House about this is phony.
It's fear-mongering. It's, you know, the Fox News alert culture. We may as well, you know, last time we had an election, a big election in 2004, it was the phony terror alerts, which went up and down every day to keep everyone on edge. It's over. This guy has no credibility. He has nothing anymore. And frankly, giving him any sort of, you know, even talking about him debating the issue in a legitimate way gives credence and legitimacy to this guy who ought to be run out of the house, out of town, put in jail, and never heard from again, put in one of his secret prisons, for that matter, without habeas corpus while we're at it. You know, so when you join the debate on these issues, and, you know, I mean, we saw this done with Social Security, with Homeland Security, with the Iraq War, and so on and so forth.
Well, the torture bill.
Or the torture bill. I mean, look, I remember when, who was the, Roberts was nominated as Chief Justice. And you'll recall at the time the Democrats back then said, "Well, we can't vote against them. We can't filibuster. We'll keep our powder dry for the next guy." And then along comes Alito, and they do the same thing, and they get in there and they act like they're, you know, frankly, they shouldn't have voted on Roberts. They shouldn't have voted on Alito. George W. Bush is an illegitimate president. He's a criminal. He doesn't deserve to be in office. And they shouldn't entertain these guys anymore, period, just on the, you know, just on that basis alone. They give credibility. George Bush should be held up to ridicule. He should be laughed at. He should be regarded as, you know, I hosted an event recently with Gore Vidal, who referred to Bush as a rodeo clown with a big red nose and big floppy ears. I think that's kind of the way we ought to regard him.
Yeah. Little children should point at him in the streets and laugh.
Well, that's exactly right. And so when you enter these debates and you deal with them, you know, and debate these issues, you're giving credence to them that they simply do not deserve. Because ultimately what ends up happening is you get into a debate with these guys where you've got one side fighting a legitimate debate and the other side completely lying and making things up. And that's not a debate. That doesn't move the ball forward. And all it does is serve to level the playing field for folks who don't deserve a level playing field at this point.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, because it occurred to me, I hated that line about keeping our powder dry.
Yeah.
I mean, that was legitimately used. That's not a Brad Friedmanism.
Well, that's right.
We're gonna live to fight another day. Well, you know, they kept their powder dry, but when the time came, as we found out with the torture bill, for God's sakes, because there wasn't even the possibility of a filibuster of that thing. Did you realize that? It was built in that cloture was already invoked.
Which one? The first or the second one?
When it was debated in the Senate.
Right. Well, there was Roberts, and then there was a leak.
No. I'm talking about the torture bill.
The torture bill.
It wasn't. They built it. They kept it. Basically, what it boils down to is we found out that the powder they were keeping dry was translucent face powder.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's true. I mean, and I would suggest at this point, you know, some of these Democrats just walk out. You know, why bother debate? They're phony debates. And I'll tell you those, because I know there were some Democrats who chose to vote in favor of that torture bill. Let them stand up alone. Let them be the only, 16 Democrats?
13.
Who shamefully voted for that? Let them vote alone. Let their colleagues just walk out.
11 of whom, interestingly enough, were members of the Democratic Leadership Council.
Mm-hmm. That's the group.
Yeah, that's our buddies. But no, you're absolutely right. At some point in time, all the things we should be talking about. We are now officially less than a month from the election.
Mm-hmm.
I said it. Do I know that? I have no confidence whatsoever that my vote is going to be counted. Now, I'm not in a state or in a district where my vote is particularly in play. They might actually vote. They might actually count it.
Hey,
but
your vote is in play. You've got small local elections. You've got all sorts of things. Your vote matters. Period.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about as compared to, say, a Pennsylvania where it's Santorum versus Casey, or a Virginia where it's Webb versus Allen.
Right.
The hotly contested places is what I'm comparatively speaking.
Well, okay, Bob. But remember, even that, I'll.
But
I'll
what I'm getting at though is even in a relatively sedate election.
Yeah.
I don't know that my vote gets counted.
Well, that's right. And that's what's important. And, I would further urge that there are no relatively sedate elections, that even that whole swing state strategy and those hot races and that whole red-blue nonsense is a complete and utter construct of the White House and Karl Rove, and that Democrats, again, do themselves no favors when they play into the bad guy's narrative. And they do it all the time. And, of course, we've seen that there's a pretty much an out-and-out civil war in the DNC between the, you know, Howard Dean and between Rahm Emanuel over at the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, you know, where Dean had wanted to support candidates in all 50 states. Rahm wanted to cover just, 15 states or something like that, those quote-unquote swing elections. Well, those swing elections weren't decided by Rahm. They were decided by Karl Rove. You know, and whenever you hear, you know, I did a lot of work after the election down in San Diego to replace
Busby Bilbray.
Busby Bilbray election, right, to replace Duke Cunningham when they sent those voting machines home on sleepovers. Well, one of the reasons that I heard from the DNC that they weren't willing to come in and fight for it later, despite the fact that it was undeniable that sending those machines home on sleepovers was against federal and state law, was because they said, oh, well, you know what, that was a red district. It was a red county, and it was going to be hard for her to win there anyway. So, you know, maybe the election was the results were accurate. A, they didn't know that. And B, I took a close look at those numbers. And it's something like, you know, registered Republicans, 530,000. Registered Democrats, 480,000. Okay, there's a bit of a difference there. But there was like 380,000 independent, undeclared voters in play, and I'll tell you what, those people ain't voting for George Bush. So when the Democrats roll over, give up on districts like that, and by the way, Busby's running again, and I understand they're not giving her any money this time around.
Oh, no. There's, I got real problems with Rahm Emanuel. I'm in your corner on this one, Brad, because, here in West Virginia, and it boggles my mind to even talk about this or to think that this would be that they wouldn't just be jumped on like a duck on a June bug. We got a woman, Shelley Moore Capito, 2nd District, West Virginia. She has done every time George Bush has hollered froggy, she's yelled how high. And she took more money than any other woman in Congress, and all but one man from Tom DeLay and Rahm Emanuel Bupkis. Nothing for her opponent. And it's not like her opponent's, you know, some guy who wandered in office. He's a former federal prosecutor. He's been chairman of the state Democratic Party committee. He's smart as a whip. Nothing.
Well, and that's what we're seeing. We're seeing that all over the place. And when they do that, you know, as they did in Busby Bilbray, they're playing into that whole red-blue nonsense. They are internalizing Karl Rove's strategy for him. I mean, the bad guys don't even need to do anything at that point because the Democrats will do it for them. You named that one candidate. I mean, this is happening all over the country. There are great candidates. You know, our friend Tony Trupiano.
That's exactly. I was just thinking of him.
Yeah, up in Michigan, and he's not getting a dime up there. And I talked to him, and he tells me that he's running even right now. It's one of these quote-unquote red districts that was supposed to have been solidly Republican. He's running even with the House incumbent, and that was actually prior to the whole Foley thing.
Right.
He's getting no money from the D-trip from the DNC. Clint Curtis down in Florida, who I believe you've had on your show, if I'm remembering correctly.
Not lately, but yeah.
Well, yeah, if you haven't, you should, because he's down there. His internal polling is similarly positive and perhaps even better. And he's running against this guy, this crazy guy, Tom Feeney, who was thought to be a shoo-in.
Oh, he is. He's crazier than a run-over dog, Feeney is.
He's nuts, and he's running this crazy campaign against Clint Curtis, calling him crazy, creating these smear sites, sending out porn mailings to voters. I mean, he's spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on this campaign that's backfiring, not to mention he was a close colleague of Mark Foley's. He was in the leadership, the GOP leadership, the
yeah.
leadership that was supposed to have known about the Foley thing for years. That's right now at the top of Brad Blog, and one of the reasons I was late calling into you, because I was trying to get that story out. Clint Curtis is not getting a dime from the National Party. It all relies on the people, the citizens, to support these folks, and their opponents. You know, Tom Feeney has over $1 million in his war chest.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's insane. So when I say, you know, forget that nonsense, don't play into their, you know, into the White House story of the day, you know, I would say the same thing to you. Have Tony Trupiano on. Have Clint Curtis on. Have the candidate, and I forgot her name, that you mentioned out there. You know, have her on, have me on, have these stories that are not being reported but need to be. Let us make the agenda instead of letting the bad guys, the America haters like Karl Rove and George Bush, define our media agenda.
I understand exactly what you're saying. I think about we had John Lash on from Illinois 14th.
Yeah.
You know, this guy, he's running against Denny Hastert.
That's right.
Can't get a dime.
That's right.
You know, in Rahm Emanuel's own state.
And I hope that's changed now. I don't know. Did you have him on before?
It was, what, Thursday, Friday?
Oh, since the Foley scandal?
Oh, yeah.
And he's still not getting anything from the National Party.
Bupkis.
Disgraceful.
Yeah, it is disgraceful because, you know what, Brad, that I maintain this really sort of Pollyanna-esque a view of the way the republic should work, a place where men and women of noble intention and passion and commitment and intelligence not only should be able to run, but are almost duty and honor bound to participate in the republic. And that's what we're dealing with. You know, we've had conversations with Sam Simpson down in Florida. Wow, what an amazing woman she is,
yeah,
running against an incumbent Republican.
Yeah.
Not a dime. Okay,
yep.
You ever run in a political campaign, Brad?
I have not.
It ain't fun.
Yeah, I know it's not.
And you don't do it for your health. If you're doing it for the right reasons, you're not doing it for your health.
Yep.
And it is brutalizing, grueling work.
It is.
And anyone willing to get out there and do that, you know, and I'm not, you know. you know, there are some people who, you know, pay for the vanity of having their name show up on the ballot. These are not the people I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I haven't interviewed a single one of those kind of people on this program.
Yeah.
These are all people who desperately want to go to Washington because they have a vision, they have a yearning.
That's exactly right.
And they're tired of seeing things run as they are. And these people deserve. I'm a Howard Dean guy on this issue.
Yeah.
You know, run in 50 states. There's a new book out by a fellow named Tom Schaller. Have you seen this thing, Whistling Past Dixie?
I have not.
It's a book whose central argument is that the Democratic Party should, for the time being, forget that the South exists. Because all the low-hanging fruit that is to be had in terms of electoral politics are to be had outside the Deep South. You know, that irritates me.
Well, it should. Yeah, I mean, it's just this notion that you should pick and choose. I mean, as you say, you know, if only to underscore these people, and I've seen them, and they're impressive as hell. You know, some of these folks. I mean, I know Tony Trupiano, I think, very well. And, I mean, this guy knows the topics, he knows the issues, he gave up his job as a radio host, but for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this guy knows his stuff better than anybody who I've ever spoken to, knows these issues and knows how to fight for them. I believe he was the first one who was endorsed by Impeach PAC because he was willing to come out and say that, you know, Bush ought to be impeached for these crimes. You know, he's a fighter. Of course, that scares the hell out of the Democrats. Oh my God, impeachment? Oh my God, we're going to hold somebody accountable under a constitutional duty to do so? Oh no, we won't support that person. I mean, it's just nuts. You've got to fight these guys on every level, and you've got to hold them accountable, and you've got to support them because, you know, I know what Tony's up against. I talked to him not long ago. He's exhausted. You know, they don't have the money they need. He hasn't worked. I think he's been running now for the past 6 or 8 months. Clint Curtis is doing the same thing down there. I know they're doing it all over the country. And it's a disgrace that the National Party is not in there fighting for these things. I mean, for some reason or another, I was invited a month or so ago to the National DNC convention in Chicago, to their state party chairs convention.
Mm-hmm.
And they made the perhaps mistake of asking me to address them.
Oh, Lord.
Yes, at a panel. And so I got there because I wanted to talk to these guys, and I told them the story about what the hell is going on the ground with our election system, what happened down there in that Busby-Bilbray race. And I got to tell you, the attorneys in general, the lead attorneys, the ones who have been there for 30 years, they are just completely clueless on this stuff. You know, they're, again, repeat, well, we're going to have thousands of attorneys out there on Election Day watching for anything untoward. Well, as you know, Bob, it's done by Election Day.
Well, sure.
You know, that's
and beyond that, you know, it's that's where you haul out the Stalin quote. It's not who votes, it's who counts the votes.
Well, that's right. And that counting is already done. When you have sent the voting machines home, which we now know are hackable within 60 seconds time. A single person can implant a virus on them, as shown by Princeton a few weeks ago. And by the way, that was a source of mine who gave me this Diebold touchscreen machine that my group, VelvetRevolution.us, passed on to them. It showed that a virus could be hacked onto one of these systems in 60 seconds time. It would flip votes. There would be no way to find it. It would pass itself from machine to machine, and then it would delete itself after the election. And you know, even Fox News, actually, I was stunned, had these guys, had the professor from Princeton on with the machine showing, you know, everybody in the room voted for George Washington in this mock election, and they printed out the results, and what do you know? Benedict Arnold was the winner. That seems to me.
Oh, it's very important, and even the rest of the world is showing the way. I read an article one of our moderators in the chat room sent me the other day. The Irish electronic voting machines. Have you seen this thing?
It was the Irish or Dutch or something.
Well,
like that.
It was the Irish machines that was tested in the Netherlands. They were able to play chess on the damn thing.
Yeah.
Now, granted, over here it would be pawn. this is not conspiracy theory.
No.
This is there's nothing Anybody who's ever had a virus slip into their PC should be, and this includes Republicans, should be able to comprehend, Brad, how easy this is to happen.
Well, that's right. And by the way, it's not a conspiracy theory. It's not a theory because it's been proven, and it doesn't take a conspiracy if it only takes one person to flip an entire election, and that's what we now know that it does.
And when you've got a guy like Stephen Freeman out there, MIT trained, fully tenured PhD professor at Penn, who does the hard nuts and bolts statistical work on the stuff, and comes out and tells you point blank, beyond a reasonable doubt, you know, this is the kind of stuff that would hold up in a criminal trial if anybody's listening, that the 2004 election was out and out stolen. You know, it's time to stop. You talk about setting the agenda. It's time to stop allowing the other side to say, well, you know, you're a sore loser. It's a conspiracy theory. Move on, get on with it, get over it. No, damn it. This is the Republic, right?
Yep.
This is something that people have fought and bled and died for. And when it is being stolen, I have no intention of getting over it.
You're absolutely right. And thank you for not getting over it. And, you know, but it has taken, you know, I've been on this beat for about 2 years trying to, you know, bang the drum. Finally, some of the national media has begun to notice this, has begun to report on these things. But guess what? It's too late. I mean, by and large, there is very little that we can do. And I'm going to announce something tomorrow along the lines of the emergency paper ballots initiative that I was able to call for a couple weeks ago and then was proposed in the House and the Senate just before they adjourned. But by and large, it's too late to do anything about it. So when you hear these media folks get around to national media, get around to finally reporting on this as we're beginning to see now more and more, well, guess what? It's too late. Where the hell were you for the past 2 years? Because early voting has already started in many places. They can't change their machines. And that's exactly, you know, I worked with, years ago, I did some freelance stories for a small paper in Missouri. And the editor, I remember, said to me at the time that journalism is not telling people what has happened. It's about telling people what is going to happen. And the media has been completely delinquent in their job to do exactly that, to tell us months and years ago what was going to happen this November and what we've already seen now in week after week, primary election after primary election, when machines broke down, numbers didn't make any sense, people were turned away by the thousands, legally registered voters told, oh, please come back later, the machines don't work right now. You know, where the hell was the media back then when something could be done about it? That's what we're facing. That's why we're in the mess that we're in. And even if there is, by some stroke of luck, a cleaning of the House and Senate this November, and who knows what's going to happen, if that happens, terrific. But we are in such a pickle right now in Iraq with these laws, with this Supreme Court, you know, all of which are going to be, you know, we are going to be paying for years. You don't wait until it's already happened.
Well, and that's, you know, there is always, at least in my tiny, what passes for my tiny mind, Brad, there's always room for a little bit of just absolute unmitigated paranoia. I wonder from time to time if perhaps the Republicans, having played as long, you know, they've played it out. They don't have any more money to spend. They got nowhere else to invade because they broke the military. I wonder at this point in the game whether maybe there's a little bit of give upness to what is going on here now, because if the Democrats get an unassailable veto proof majority, the amount of work that we have to do should be enough to prove utterly horrifying to contemplate. You know, I'm convinced that the 2008 presidential election is already largely decided, not in the machines, but in the mind, because there's going to be a Democrat in the White House, because trying to deal with George Bush's mess would kill whatever follows in the Republican Party. And in 2012, Jebby Bush is going to be president, so you need a one-term Democrat in there. but what I'm getting at is we've got to be up to the task.
Mm-hmm.
The Republican Party never will be. They're not. They have never been, and never will be up to hard work.
Right.
When it was World War II, they were the ones standing up in Congress assailing FDR for his conduct of the war. It was the same story with World War I.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth remembering that not a single congressional Republican, a member of the House or the Senate, voted in favor of Social Security when it was proposed in Congress.
And I'll take that opportunity to point out that not a single Republican in the House or the Senate would sign on to the bill that was proposed last week just before they went on recess that called for emergency paper ballots at the polls this November. So if and when those polls break down, those machines break down, you're hearing reports on November 7th that people aren't able to vote, that the lines are out the window, out the doors again, that they're told to come back later, you will know exactly who to blame for that, because not a single Republican would sign on. Now, mind you, let me point out that it was a Republican governor up in Maryland, who, after they had a meltdown a few weeks back in their primary election, he called for paper ballots for the entire state. And in that case, it was a Democratic election director by the name of Linda Lamone, and she's been the one who's been pushing for these Diebold machines up there, who has been delinquent and, fighting, apologizing for Diebold. And there was a Republican who did step forward and do the right thing. So I do like to point out, when we have those rare cases of, intellectually honest Republicans, and I'm more than happy to beat the crap out of those Democrats who don't do what needs to be done, like Linda Lamone in Maryland, who needs to be fired.
Without a doubt.
Because this is, again, as you say, it is about our republic. It is about taking our country back. And frankly, if the cretins are Democrats or Republicans, I don't give a damn. They happen to be Republicans right now, by and large, and so it's their turn. And guess what? I hope you'll join me if those Democrats do get into the House and the Senate this November, if that happens, and hold them accountable.
Brad, we have already said,
yep.
I have already said on this program that, and I'm about halfway from figurative to actual, I want to build a white-hot blaze.
Yep.
Where, so white and so hot you can see through the fire. And I want to hold the little congressional Democrats' feet up to it till they start to screaming.
Yep.
And say, get running. Go to work.
Yep.
Don't slow down. Don't want to hear you talking about what you can't do. If you can't do it, you should have told us before the election and we wouldn't have given you the job.
Well, that's exactly right. Of course, they'll tell you that we did say before the election we weren't going to impeach him, which is a line that they've walked, which is a miracle to me. I don't understand why they don't come out and just say, guess what? The rule of law matters. It is our constitutional duty to hold these people accountable. And when we convene a commission to take a look at what has been done, and if we determine that George W. Bush has committed high crimes and misdemeanors, you're damn right we're going to hold him accountable. You're damn right he will be impeached, because we have no choice.
We are going to take our oath of office seriously.
That's right.
That's what it boils down to.
Yep.
Like I said early on, I said guilty as charged. I try to point out the phony stuff. But by the same token, I try to point out what's being missed. To this day, I haven't seen it on the evening news, on any of the alphabet soups, main networks, cable, whatever. A working American's right to be in a union, for instance, was gutted by the National Labor Relations Board last week. Hear the crickets?
Yeah.
It doesn't get much more serious than that.
Well, that's right. And you need to cover that, and I know that you are, and, I should point out that you are one of the great exceptions in the media, because you have gone out of your way. You are not hanging on the corporate media agenda. When the bad guys did you in, you said, you know what, I'm not going to take that sitting down. I'm going to get back up on the air by myself and tell the stories that need to be told that aren't being told by that corporate media. And, like I say, it's easy to pick on Fox. It's really easy to pick on Fox.
The
fact of the matter is that this goes to all of the networks, ABC, CBS, NBC. I linked to an article over the weekend that was run over at Media Matters about CNN, and they called them Fox's mini-me. it was extraordinary the way that CNN, same thing, has been covering this Foley scandal. They kept repeating over and over again the Republicans charge that, you know, asking, well, what did Nancy Pelosi know and when did she know it? And this is a Democratic campaign surprise, blah, blah, blah.
They've done everything but have Michael Savage on to repeat the whole thing. Wow, the kid was probably a Democrat in the first place.
Well, you're right. Now, you know, if you want, if you feel that that's newsworthy, that Denny Hastert is suggesting without a shred of evidence that Democrats were somehow behind this Mark Foley scandal, fine. Report it if you want. But report the truth, and the truth, which was reported by ABC, who broke the story, New York Times, who covered it, and The Hill, one of the most respected newspapers in D.C., that the original source for this story was a Republican. This came from the source, from the guy, you know, from Brian Ross, who broke this
right.
story.
And now we know today.
And they didn't report that once, Bob.
Yeah, I know, I know. And Jim, what is it? Is it Jim Colby, Arizona?
Yeah.
That came out today and said he saw it 6 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, that throws that whole thing into chaos because the next because you've got to ask, well, you know, if the Democrats were sitting on this story, why was Jim Colby sitting on it too?
Yep.
Yeah, this is it's dirty from the get-go. It is it's the setup to the to one of the what may turn out to be you talk about journalists telling what's going to happen. This the Foley scandal, if it's played by the Republicans the way they appear to be playing it, is going to turn out to be one of the ugliest gay baiting or any kind of baiting passages in American history in recent memory. It has the potential to make red baiting look tame.
Did I mention the story that I just broke before I came on the air about Tom Feeney over at bradblog.com at the very top of the
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to mention that again since you brought up you know, what did people know and when did they know it? I would urge people to read that article. And as I say, just keep Mr. Feeney's involvement as a member of the leadership, a colleague of Mr. Foley's. Keep all of that in mind as you read.
I've got to get Clint on again
soon. Yes, you do.
We need to have him around and introduce him to folks. Because, well, for among other things, the guy's a real live honest to God genius for starters, and I want smart people in Congress. But this the fight that he has going on against Tom Feeney, you know, my lovely wife Agnes looked at me the first time you said Feeney's sending out porno mails.
Yeah,
and she went porno. And I went yeah porno. Yeah, he really is doing that, isn't he? I mean, pornographic.
Well, yeah, what it was, and you know, as long as you mentioned Clint's site, let me mention it, ClintCurtis.com. Please support him. Please donate to him because he is fighting for your electoral integrity. Yeah, Tom Feeney sent out 100,000 mailers. The most bizarre thing in what has already been an incredibly bizarre campaign, he used a doctored photo of Curtis where he cut out his Curtis's head and placed it. Now you got to follow this twisted logic. He pasted Curtis's head on Hugh Hefner's body, and then charged that a vote for Clint Curtis is a vote for Larry Flint of Hustler. And he put a picture of Hustler magazine on the cover of this mailing. Now, mind you. Hustler ran a story of mine that I wrote on the mysterious death of the inspector, Florida Inspector General, who was looking into Clint Curtis's charges years ago, who suddenly showed up dead in Valdosta, Georgia. It's an extraordinary story,
mm-hmm.
if you're not familiar. Chilling, terrifying story,
yeah.
Frankly. And so they ran the story, and for some reason now this means that Larry Flint himself is endorsing Clint Curtis, and to show that he puts Clint's head on Hugh Hefner's body, and the result is the first day that it hit, Channel 9 down in New Smyrna Beach, Florida, ran a story, local mom enraged by porn mailing when her son, her 9-year-old son, went out to the mailbox, got this mailer out, and said, Mommy, what's Hustler magazine?
What will we tell the children, Brad?
Indeed.
Hey, Brad, I'm so glad we got a chance to talk. We don't do this nearly enough. I always enjoy our time together on the air.
As I do with you. Anytime you'd like me back, just give me a holler. I'm always happy to talk to you. We can even take some calls sometime.
Hey, we will. Yeah, we should do that. We'll do that sometime. Okay, Brad, take care.
Thank you, my friend. Keep up the good work.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. He and I do seem to be of one mind on this. We're being conned with the North Korea thing, just like we were conned with the immigration thing, just like we were conned with the terror alerts, just like we're conned with Iran. But isn't that what cons do? Cons con. Snakes bite, as Lee noted. So don't necessarily, you know it for what it is, and then act to end it. Act to remove it. We have our doubts about the voting machines. Just the same, vote. Because if you cannot win if you do not play. Got a couple of lines open if you want to join the conversation. 877-443-2366 is the number. We will go straight to the phones coming out of the news. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Today's nuclear weapons test by North Korea has generated worldwide censure. The 15-nation UN Security Council issued a unanimous resolution to condemn North Korea. The U.S. is seeking sanctions and lobbying for a trade ban against North Korea. The Bush administration may also argue for international inspections of all cargo entering and leaving the Asian country. As expected, the U.N. Security Council today unanimously nominated South Korea's Foreign Minister Ban Ki-moon to be the next U.N. Secretary General. He still must be confirmed by the General Assembly. In Washington, a bipartisan commission assessing the Bush administration's Iraq strategy is expected to recommend a departure from the president's plan to stay the course. Former Secretary of State James Baker co-chairs the group. In Baghdad, the brother of Iraq's vice president was assassinated today. 13 other people were killed after a car bomb went off in a busy marketplace. 46 were wounded. In Saddam Hussein's war crimes trial today, a Kurdish witness testified Saddam's guards routinely buried detainees alive. Defense attorneys continue to boycott the proceedings, protesting the replacement of the original judge. The Miami Herald reports the Navy attorney who challenged the Bush administration's policy for Guantanamo Bay prisoners is being forced out of the military. The lieutenant commander was told he had been passed over for promotion 2 weeks after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in his favor and against the White House. In Afghanistan, NATO's top military commander is renewing his plea for more troops. He says the failure of international forces to deliver needed improvements may lead to Afghanis switching allegiance back to the Taliban. Another recall from California's Salinas Valley, this time for lettuce packaged under the Foxy brand. The lettuce sold earlier this month in 7 western states may have been contaminated with E. coli. Also recalled, bottled carrot juice thought to be contaminated with botulism. At least 3 people have fallen ill. The carrot juice is sold under the labels Earthbound Farms, Bolt House, and President's Choice. The Washington Post reports another GOP congressman, Arizona's Jim Colby, knew about former Congressman Mark Foley's inappropriate emails to underage pages as far back as 6 years ago. And Cuban President Fidel Castro is dying of cancer, according to Time magazine. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A new species of brilliantly colored brush finch has been discovered in the Andean cloud forest. Its discovery has prompted the Colombian government to set aside a 500-acre pristine forest as a national park. Today, Google bought YouTube for $1.65 billion in stock. The acquisition came just hours after YouTube announced deals with CBS and two major music labels. The popular video-sharing site is attempting to avoid copyright infringement lawsuits. OPEC ministers are expected to formally announce tomorrow they're removing 1 million barrels of crude oil a day from the market, which they say is oversupplied. In the past 2 weeks, the average price for a gallon of unleaded gasoline fell 14 cents to an average of $2.28. Prices are now 75 cents less than at their highest in August. Toyota says it's delaying the launch of its new Corolla in North America until 2008 in order to maintain quality. The chief executive of Airbus resigned today, 3 months after he took the job. Airbus has announced a 2-year delay of its A380 Super Jumbo jet. Light sweet crude ended the trading day today at $60 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange, and at the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 8 points at 11,857, NASDAQ up 12 at 2311, the S&P 500 was up 1 at 1350. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
We're back. What a wonderful conversation that was with Brad Friedman. I'm just looking at the post we were talking about. Bush administration supportive media outlets launch nuclear test strategy for November election. The hardest thing to do in the long run is to keep some semblance of focus. The hardest thing to do is to pay attention to the fact that there are 55 million Americans who don't have health care. The hardest thing to do is to recognize that we had seven. Now, I'm not going to use the kill numbers, the wounded numbers. There were 700 and some odd woundings last month, September, in Iraq. Okay? In the first week of October, the number of wounded American soldiers equaled 300. Almost half of the entire, and the month of September was the ugliest month in 2-3 years of this war of lies. So the job is paying attention to that. The job is paying attention to even knowing. You know, you're ahead of the curve right now because you know what the Kentucky River cases were and what it means to working American families. The job is focusing on that. It is safe for you to assume that if the White House is not talking about it, we should be. And I am not an egomaniac. I really, really am not. I'm far too unserious to be an egomaniac. And as such, if you catch me, okay, we'll make a deal. If you catch me falling into a Republican trap, you tell me. If you catch me talking about missing girls in Aruba instead of talking about people who can't go to the doctor when they're sick, you tell me about that. And I, for my part of the bargain, will thank you. Because you know what? It comes in waves. You ever had a really bad case of nausea? And it just, it seems, what's the old line about seasickness? At first you think you're going to die, and then the worst part about it is that after a while you think you're not. What comes out of the White House is that kind of nastiness. All right? So you help me stay on the ball, and I promise you I'll do my dead level best. Let's go to Florida. Phil joins us. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks, Bob. Great show, and it was great to hear your conversation with Brad Friedman. I'm down in here in Florida, right in Clint Curtis's backyard, and it's true. We've got some fantastic candidates. You know about Sam Simpson,
mm-hmm.
over on St. Pete, Tampa area, that aren't getting a single dime from this Democratic Party. And I do want to touch on what you and Brad were talking about as far as what the corporate media dictates to us as far as what the topic of conversation is going to be. I think shut it off. Stop feeding it. I'm talking about us as a people,
uh-huh.
you know, not you. Directed at you, but turn the TV sets off. We had a similar conversation last week on the Bruce Burch show, and I was talking about stop feeding it. Turn the television off. I emailed to you and Bruce a link to an interview with a columnist out of your home state there, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you know of him. His name is Charles Sullivan.
Charlie and I email back and forth quite a bit.
Oh, great. He did this. Somebody sent me. It was an interview done last month, September 17. And towards the end of the interview, he has a quote, if you don't mind me.
No, share it, please.
A lifetime of propaganda is not easy to overcome, yet that is our task. We must establish our own media, printed word, web-based content, including video, streaming and DVD, and audio, in order to counter the lies purveyed in the commercial media. We must support net neutrality and keep the Internet a free and democratic medium. We must provide places where truth can still be heard. We need more free speech radio like the Pacifica Network, and like the Horn, that's not in there, but I
got to talk to Charlie about that.
And more alternative newspapers and other print media willing to challenge the status quo. And we're running out of time, Bob, as you know. What I was mentioning to Bruce last week on the program was we literally have to be the new, we have to take the truth to our neighbors and do it in all kinds of ways. Bumper stickers on your car. I wear as many controversial T-shirts and buttons as I can, and so whenever I'm in a store, I don't even have to wait for a comment. If I notice somebody looking at it and giving a smile or just seeing it in their eyes, I start to say, well, you know why I feel, you know why I think Bush should be impeached? You know, and then I'll mention, well, did you know that there's proof that he lied about weapons of mass destruction and we had thousands of kids enlist because,
yeah,
you know, and I said that.
That's the kind of courageous act that I was, we were talking about with the people who went out this past October 5th for the World Can't Wait protests.
Yeah.
It's personal courage. This is the kind of courage that can change a life. When you get to the point where you realize that you are willing to stand up and speak out, not for yourself, not for your own political platform, but for the very future of this republic.
Well,
then you enter a whole different realm of patriotism.
And you know what, Bob? It's not that difficult. And it begins with turning off that damn box and not feeding it, because Brad had a good point. You know, whatever the story is, it's coming from the corporate media, which is controlled by Rove and the Bush, you know, the powers that be. And forget about it. You know, if we don't show up to fight, there's no fight. There's no, they don't win, you know. Don't even engage it. And we don't have time. We have to, the corporate media, the TV, radio, and all, not the horn, but you know, mainstream media, we're not going to change it. And so I say don't even deal with it. And, like, if I'm in the grocery store and I have this shirt on, somebody says, hey, I like your shirt, and it's impeach Bush, you know, then I'll say why I feel he should be, and mention the Downing Street memos. Yeah, you didn't hear about that. And I always say it loud enough so people shopping in the store over, you know, hear me, whether they want to or not. You know, and you're planting seeds all over the place. But one other, Charles Sullivan, your friend, in this quote I just read, you know, where we must establish our own media, including video, streaming, and DVD, one of the things that's been happening over the past year or so is these DVDs, documentaries being issued directly as DVDs. And I don't know if Brad mentioned www.stealingamerica.org.
And that's stealing with an E-A?
Yes.
Stealingamerica.org, okay.
And the name of the film is Stealing America, colon, Vote by Vote. And it's all about the current state of our electoral, you know, our election system, the machines and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And the one about Iraq and the war profiteers, which is an outrage if people get a look at this, is www.iraqforsale.org, and that's all spelled out, Iraq for sale, all letters. And that's all about, you know, war profiteering. And then another one, I think, you know, and I'll the last one I want to mention is a newly revamped or reissued of hijackingcatastrophe.org, www.hijackingcatastrophe.org. And that's all about the Project for a New American Century, which, you know, as you know, was they laid out this whole foreign policy plan in September 2000. It was the group was started by Cheney and Rumsfeld and John Bolton, Paul Wolfowitz, Stephen Hadley, Scooter Libby, the whole crew that's been in that hijacked this White House. They advocated for an invasion of Iraq, staying there long enough and never leaving, setting up permanent bases for subsequent invasions of Iran and Syria, and everything that's happened regarding our foreign policy and our military adventures.
There are
right on the letter, man.
Yeah, there are no accidents in any of this.
No, incompetence is, you know, it's not incompetent.
Well, you know, the Bush administration would have us believe that they're like the Malachi Constant character from Vonnegut's Sirens of Titan, where he says, I was a victim of a series of accidents, as are we all. There has not been a single accident happen since George Bush took office, Phil. It's that simple. Do you remember? Do you remember watching Katrina churning away out in the Gulf, moving as slow as a hurricane of that force and magnitude can move?
Totally deliberate. You know, Bush. You know, the corporate media did release for a day or two that video that some guy in copied, you know, of Bush being given warning like 48 hours ahead of time in that little room, you know, but it got 1 or 2 days play and America forgot that everything they're doing is deliberate. These are smart people. You don't hijack a country without having some smarts to you, you know, and the whole thing with the quagmire in Iraq, you know, is same thing as Vietnam. They wanted that thing to go as long as they could and milk as much money out of the treasury and as possible and keep political power. It's been carried out to the letter. If anyone, I highly recommend Hijacking Catastrophe. And my point is with these films, the reason why I mention them, tomorrow night and all across America this past week, the film about the Iraq war veterans coming home, called The Ground Truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's being shown, you know, we're showing it tomorrow in our public library tomorrow night, you know, and we sent flyers out to the high schools and the student government associations, the PTA, you know, and you just go out and reach people. And I was talking with Bruce about this last week on his program, and he was saying, gee, Phil, you're a super activist. And I said, no, that's not what I'm trying to relay here. I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy. You know, I live in a tiny apartment. I have a computer. You know, I try to keep my cable bill paid so I can keep the computer going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But I shut the TV off.
You might have a small budget, but you got a big conscience, Phil.
But my point is you don't have to be.
Oh, no. You don't have to be Tony and know which fork to use with the shrimp. I mean, you know,
yeah.
No, you've got to have a conscience. You got to have some guts.
But the cool thing
about the guts, Phil, is that if you do it once,
yes,
and you get that feeling of, wow, that's what being American feels like.
Then
it's 1,000 times easier to do it the second time, and the third time you do it, you've gone pro.
It's like the high school dance. Who's going to be the first one out on the dance floor?
Exactly,
you know,
exactly.
And hey, man, I think, it, you know, you have folks listening to the horn. Right then and there, you're concerned about America. You're concerned about our country being destroyed by these bastards. Oops.
No.
Okay.
Bastards in play.
Okay, great. You know, so right then and there, anyone listening, if you're wondering if you have it in you to do, the fact that you're listening to the horn is that answers that question right there. And try these things. They are scary at first, so take small steps, you know. But I was scared the first day I wore my Impeach Bush Cheney t-shirt. You know, I was, you know, and I've been at this activism for a while, but I'm not going to say it wasn't scary, but I lived through it. And it, like you just said, Bob, it made it easier to do it the second time. And what I carry flyers in the front seat of my car, you know, after downingstreet.org, I mm-hmm. tell people about that, go there. Every time a solicitor calls, you know, to try to sell me something on the phone, I always mention, like, let's say a loosechange911.com, you know, get people looking
yeah.
in the, you know, 9/11 and see all the weird crap about that, you know, the government lying to us, and, you know, get them thinking about that. Or I try to take every opportunity, you know, when I go out to the drop a letter in the mail and the guy in the postal truck is there, he's emptying the blue box, you know. I say, hey, man, did you see that movie Loose Change? What is it? No, it's a documentary. It looks into the 9/11, and boy, there's a lot of stuff we weren't told about.
All America has to do is start talking again. I mean, that's why we're doing what we're doing here.
And I'm calling in to have this conversation with you, Bob. Not so much to you know, I enjoy talking with you, but I know that there's people out there listening, and today might be the first day that someone's tuned into the horn and heard about Project for a New American Century or
yeah.
after, you know.
Well, that is a profoundly important point, Phil, because we are tuned in. People like me, generally the people who share their time to listen to the programs that we offer on the horn, all the programs that run over at radiopower.org, people who are tuned in to progressive thought, progressive radio, progressive media, new media, You know, we know about the Project for a New American Century. We know, you know, we know about Prescott Bush's activities with Brown Brothers Harriman and Fritz Thyssen. And, we know, good God, you know, what we...
But we didn't always know because
no,
somebody...
We didn't always know.
We listened in one night and heard it or read it.
Right.
And so now we might be...
Yeah,
telling
but we,
each other was something we, you and I know already, but we're repeating it.
So, and the fact of the matter is, we tend to get in a little box where we think that, well, you know, if you're paying attention at all, you have to know about this kind of stuff.
Right.
So that's what, you know, that's what makes important when you're talking to the postman and he's emptying the box and stuff, and you say, you know, have you seen it?
Yes.
Have you heard it? And he goes, no. And you follow that up. That my God, I can't tell you how important that kind of conversation is in America.
And I always carry around a memo pad with me. And I was telling Bruce this. I no longer just give my number or my email. I get theirs.
Yeah.
And try to follow up. You know. And the internet. We still have the internet. Thank God. I mean That's their next target, and if we lose that, if they privatize the internet, we're done.
Yeah, but they managed to end this Congress without destroying the internet so far. And you know, if we can get us a Democratic Congress by January, maybe we can keep on protecting it. Phil, I got a couple of other people lined up. I've so enjoyed this conversation. I hope we'll hear from you again. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yes,
because you're engaged in patriotism. Okay, you really, really are.
Yes,
and I cherish it and I honor it.
And let's get others listening who haven't tried it yet. Try it, please. We're running out of time.
Yep, exactly. Phil, take care.
Thank you, Bob.
Have
you
a
too.
Great night.
You too, Bob.
Bye
thanks.
Now. And let's see. Let's go to Luke. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How was your weekend?
Well, pretty good, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I got to sit and watch some good football. You know how that goes.
Well, yeah, got to watch the Cowboys lose.
That's always good, yes.
I know. Now,
see, I have a nephew's a real Cowboys fan. I love doing that to him.
Well, you know, I haven't liked the Cowboys since I found out there was an NFL. So you know, I come by it honest.
All right, let's get on to real story.
All right,
you know how that goes. Well, you did notice that in the Friday news dump, we lost a person. This Miss Susan Ralston.
Oh yeah.
Who apparently was working for everybody. She worked for Abramoff. She worked for Rove. It's like, say, who doesn't she work for? You just, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, I'm still wondering if people at the White House, it's like, you all have admitted to three visits. What about those 482 others? Can we talk about them yet?
Not yet.
Yeah, nobody home. You know how it is. And then we see Senator Mikaka's had a little news kick.
Oh, yeah. You mean the stock options?
Yeah.
That he didn't report?
What stock options?
What Senate stock rules? Options. Senate rules? There was a rule?
Are you going to believe me or your lying eyes reading those papers? It's like, you know, it's one of those things. It, you know, you just got to think that somewhere somebody in his staff has got to say, shut up, sit down, quit talking to anybody, you know. Because every time you open your mouth, you're sticking your foot up to your thigh into it.
Well, you know, he's Jim Webb is doing he's come dead even.
Yeah.
And I know that, for instance, organized labor in Virginia, the fine folks over at the Virginia AFL-CIO, are absolutely busting hump to get the word out and to get the vote out. I am so praying for a reasonably warm, sunny day in November.
We'll wait and see. You know, like you said, though, with the boxes, who knows?
Yeah.
But let's see what else. Oh, I saw tonight on the free speech, they actually finally had a liberal.
No.
My God, it's been, 2 months now, they finally had a liberal on.
What passes for Katie Couric's idea of a liberal?
Katrina Vandenhoevel.
Well, okay. That's legit.
I can say it's the first one I've seen I could honestly say was legit. You know? So she had a very, very nice one. You can go over to the website and listen to it.
Oh, good. Yeah, I will.
So that wasn't bad. A couple of media notes. Let's see, tonight on Dave, Mr. Williams is going to be on.
No, really? Yeah.
And then
how did the Bill Maher thing come off? I didn't
It was good. It was really good. It's like I say, sometimes it's hard to stop Robin from sometimes just going into stick. You know how it is.
Yeah.
Like he was fairly well in control. Every once in a while he lost himself for a moment. The conservative they had on was this congresswoman, I believe from Texas. I can't think of what her name was, but it was like, okay, you know, and it was a good back and forth. So, you know, I mean, that was okay. On Conan tonight, they're going to have Mr. Lewis Black on, who's always entertaining.
Oh, yeah. Oh, speaking of which, did you see today where John Stewart officially refused to run for president in 2008?
Well, Yahoo thing, I think, on that, where somebody showed up, like, at some event with a T-shirt.
Yeah.
It was like, what was it, Stewart Colbert, 08.
Yeah, and he's, I respect, the fact of the matter is, Stephen Colbert, you, me, or my 10-year-old son would do, and I am engaging in absolutely no hyperbole whatsoever on this, would do a better job at being president than George Bush.
Well, I mean, the thing that's been sitting here tonight, watching this stuff here, all talking about Kim Young crazy, you know, and it's like you're sitting there going, 6 years ago, this was almost settled. If George Bush had shut his mouth and let Colin Powell work as Secretary of State, this would not have happened.
Yeah, and not let that dummy put that line about axles of evil in the speech. Because that was what put him in the face. Yeah, that's what put paid to the whole. It's amazing whether it's the federal budget where the Clinton administration turned over a multi-trillion-dollar surplus to the Bush administration, which they destroyed, or 6 years of hard work trying to create peace on the Korean Peninsula. Everything that took years for the Clinton administration to accomplish, Luke. It took minutes for the Bush administration to utterly destroy.
I think that most people don't think about, you know, and one of the things that really did this was, gee, we used to belong to this thing, something about a non-proliferation treaty. You know, but George said, nah, that makes too much sense. We can't do that. Everybody likes that. It makes sense. No. We got to get out of that.
Exactly.
You know, it's like saying set us some 2x6s over on the side there. And every time he makes a statement, there's got to be a line of people over there just beating their heads. You know, it's like, because like I say, you just want to pick up a tire iron. It's like, you know, let me just go over here and talk to him for a minute.
I know.
It's like if he didn't have the Secret Service, I'm not worried about anybody killing him. He just gets slapped so hard every once in a while.
Right.
It's like, ugh. Two things. Tomorrow night, Oberman is having something about the habeas corpus thing. He said he was supposed to have it tonight, but said there was some other stuff that got in the way. And if you enjoyed the thing he did earlier this year tonight, the number one segment on his show tonight,
mm-hmm.
is he's replaying the interview with Buck O'Neill.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, was a beautiful interview.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So, but...
Yeah, who passed away this weekend.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about that, but... No, it's one of those things, and the thing is now, we'll stick our finger into the fetid pool that is the Foley scandal.
Did you have to put it that way?
I know. Well, like they said, somebody said somebody touched this thing and said, yeah, they better be wearing latex gloves when they do it. but now we have this one from Arizona and New Mexico, Mr. Colby's come out now, and said he told everybody, he saw it in 2000, so it's like, Mr. Hastert, you know that timeline? Time to rewrite it.
Well, yeah, and the other thing, Luke, that I find so interesting, I've had an email here telling me that my mention of right wing radio and what I expect that right wing radio today has been all Jerry Studs all the time.
Oh God!
And that's it's such a shameless fraud using Jerry Studs as a comparison. R.J. Escow, I don't know, I'm not sure how I should pronounce it, did a brilliant job today talking about the difference between Jerry Studs and Mark Foley. Because it's been turned into, I think it's an officially sanctioned Tony Snow talking point now. It's a snow job. And what Esco says is, as far as we know, Studs was not forcing his unwelcome attentions on a series of pages, one after the other. No page went to the Democratic leadership asking for protection from Studs, only to be rebuffed and ignored. The Democratic Party did not run on a platform of righteousness and anti-homosexuality while behaving hypocritically in private. The Democratic Speaker of the House did not make statements about the incident that were immediately revealed to be outright lies by fellow Democrats. Yeah, there is no comparison whatsoever between Jerry Studs and Mark Foley at all. And, you know, meanwhile, here in the beautiful mountain state, you know, almost heaven, you know, we got Shirley Moore Capito out here saying, and now she's put it in writing. Our good friend Hubert wrote in to share with me some commentary on this. She is put into writing. She is incensed. She is shocked, I tell you. In a letter delivered Friday afternoon to the Committee on Standards of Official Conduct, which is the Ethics Committee, Capito says that she's disappointed. She's disappointed, Luke, that all of the members of the House Page Board were not notified when it was first revealed that a former Page's family had raised concerns about Foley. This is what she wrote, and I quote, "I remain deeply disappointed in the events of the past week regarding Mark Foley, especially in regard to my position on the Page Board." Oh, yeah. She shouldn't use things like position and Page Board. No. "I am outraged that any incident that affects Pages would not be heard by the Page Board and therefore prevent us from taking any necessary steps to correct it. I request a meeting with representatives of the Ethics Committee to discuss the communication failure that occurred in regard to the members of the Page Board and how it can be corrected in the future." I no more believe, Luke, that this woman didn't know what was going on than I believe the sun rises in the west. Of course she knew.
Of course, the next couple of weeks we're going to have this should be a master's class in CYA. You know, the fun one I'm going to love is hearing Boehner and Boehner and however you want to say it. The third guy, I can't think of his name, the guy's third in line, explaining all their statements they made the first couple of days before I assume Karl Rove gave them all their talking points saying, you know, no. Here's what you have to say. It's like, well, Boehner was, you know, apparently he's already gone back on some of his statements. And I can't think who the other one is. The one really looks like a thug, and I can't think what his name is.
But, Luke, the important thing is that I want the liberal community, I would like for the Democratic Party in general to be, you know, we need to go all Elmer Fudd on this one. Be very, very quiet. Because the last thing we want is for Hastert to finally bow down and resign.
We want him up there. We want him waving the flag.
Stay. Denny, stay. Buddy, go to the buffet again. Stay.
We'll send you over some coupons. Come on.
Don't go. Oh, please, Denny, don't go. The only way I want Denny gone is once it becomes readily apparent that John Lash is going to be the new congressman from the 14th District of Illinois.
It's like, Denny, we'll find you an all-you-can-eat buffet. Come on, don't worry. We're going to work this out.
I know.
And it's like saying, it's one of those things. It's the death of a thousand cuts is the way it's turning into. Because like say, every day you turn around, here's another story. It's like they say, you know, you keep hearing, we want to get away from it. It's like, no. Every time you all say anything, it's coming back and kicking you again.
Yeah.
It's like it's been kicking you in one shin, okay.
We're rubber, you're glue. We're rubber, you're glue. It bounces off us and sticks to you. And, you know, for once, it's fun to watch that happen.
Well, but the thing of it is, it's like one thing on this, on the Kim Young crazy thing, just one thing we have to keep reminding people is just remember, this is because George Bush wouldn't talk to anybody on this for 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, anytime anybody even thought about trying to do something on this, it's like, no, we don't want to deal with them. They have to totally, you know, destroy everything they've got. Then we'll talk to them. I wish we could make some of our other friends do this, you know, before we talk to them. Maybe Pakistan. See, you don't want to get rid of all those nukes before we do any money business with you all?
No.
I don't think they're going to do it.
No.
I don't think the Indians are. You know, it's one of those things. It's like every time this comes up, they ought to remind. You know, we got to remind people, you know, that this thing was virtually solved when he came into office. That the Clinton administration.
But not according to CNN or Fox or CNBC or anything, no, because it was all Clinton's fault all day long on this story.
But like I say, this fell under the thing of Clinton did it. We don't want to have anything to do with it. You know, that was one of the biggest screw-ups when he came in at all. Is anything that Bill Clinton did that had any success, that, well, we can't do that. That's why, like I say, while we got out of the non-proliferation treaty, you know, while we got out bunch of stuff.
Right, and that is fundamentally because, this is proof, Luke, that these people, these Republicans, are basically, essentially, at their base, at their core, when you get right down to it, they are un-American.
Yeah.
Okay? Because, you know, they were concerned with whether or not if the Korea crisis was solved, then Bill Clinton would get some of the credit, and we can't have Bill Clinton getting credit because George Bush has to get all the credit. And that's the kind of thing that points out for us in glaring relief that these people don't care about our nation. They don't care about none of us. Nothing.
It's the sequence. See, like I say, when I think of it, when I want to describe, if you want to describe yourself, okay, I go, okay, I'm a human. I'm a citizen of this country. Somewhere about third or fourth down the line, I'm a Democrat. The Republicans, that's first, second, and third.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
You know, then somewhere down, American, oh, yeah, I'm an American, when it helps me. You know, until something they say, well, you have to sacrifice this for your country. No.
Mm-mm. No, we don't do the sacrifice thing. I know. Luke, thanks so much.
Y'all have a good evening.
You too.
See ya.
Bye now. Bye. And onward to our good friend Sarge in southern Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program. Sorry you had to wait so long, man.
Oh, that's all right, man. I learned during Katrina, after Katrina, when I called in Malloy and didn't have any electricity or anything, that sometimes it's a blessing to be on hold.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, I've been down that road a little bit, too, as far as, I remember in Mike's days with IE America, half the time their stream didn't work. And so I'd dummy up some topic that I knew would never get on the air and just get on hold and listen.
But can you imagine sitting in the dark right after?
Oh, God, no.
Melted by Katrina. Boy, I just wanted to talk to someone so bad that day I didn't know what to do. And man, I wanted to hear the news because they wasn't delivering any papers.
No, you wanted to know that there was a world still alive.
Oh no, I mean there was nothing coming out of anywhere. The only thing we had as far as newspaper went was the local newspaper, and all it was talking about was the damage that was done around the area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you couldn't find out what was going on with anybody anywhere, and so it was just, what can I say? And it's not much better. It is not much better. In fact, I sent you an email that was sent to me. I used part of it in the column. I'd like to read a section of it.
Yeah, go ahead.
It said, I'm going to go from my column here. This comes from a Katrina area, from the Katrina area on either the Louisiana Mississippi coast. And because I don't want to put that person in more danger, I am not being more precise.
I understand.
Here's what they wrote. Financially and emotionally, I feel like I am drowning. Sadly, another resident of this trailer park has died. It seems those who were saved from Katrina's storm are now drowning in her aftermath.
Jesus.
And the person that wrote this has had their identity stolen. They have had their tires slashed. They make
is now, Sarge, let me ask you, is that just random meanness or is this deliberate stuff?
It is deliberate. They have been investigated because they were known to have spoken out against some of the wrongdoing that's going on down here. And it is just ungodly. In fact, I mentioned to you when you came in the chat that she has agreed to
Yeah.
a chat with you.
Right. I'd love to have that.
To do an interview with you. And her phone's off this week because of her identity theft. She couldn't pay her car insurance without letting go of her phone. And it's just been one thing after the other. You know, I told you about the story of the worm disease.
Yeah.
And there's other things going on. There's mold and mildew that's killing people. The FEMA trailers, the toxicity of them is just murdering people left and right. And
the air feels like it's just full of poison. And you have the situation in Louisiana where you got this encampment of FEMA victims who are being held in an Exxon facility under barbed wire and being treated like they're prisoners. And DHS wants to arrest Greg Palast for national security violations because he filmed it.
Yeah. Oh, it's going. Look, Sarge, I'm not treating anything flippantly, but it is a simple thing to say, and it is a simple truth that it is going to continue to get worse before it gets better.
Yes, and now the question I asked: you can talk about Mark Foley, you can talk about Iraq, you can talk about all that, and all that's great. That's fine. But folks, if this regime will not take care of a red state battered by Katrina,
yeah,
then why in the hell does anyone think they're going to take care of anybody?
They're not going to.
And I just don't understand it. People should be mad as hell because they're killing people. I have had people say, oh, Sarge, I don't believe it's that bad.
No, it's that bad.
They just don't believe it. And I tell you what. Next time it might be you. You might have some blizzard. You might have some earthquake. You might have any kind of natural disaster. And it's going to be you. And these people who are dying on the Mississippi coast, in the Louisiana coast, they're not going to be here to speak out for you because they're going to be dead already because you didn't take time to get mad. And that's what I'm trying to say tonight. Let's get mad. Let's don't let these guys walk over us anymore. We've got to stand up and we've got to say, not in my name.
Amen. Amen.
Okay. I'm on my hand, so I will leave it
no,
there.
No, I'm not going to try to top that. I'm not, Sarge, I can't, there's nothing more to be said beyond that. You've said everything there is to say.
Well, I'm going to leave it there, Bob, because my dogs are getting upset, and that's a sign I better shut up.
Yeah, don't upset the pup.
Okay, we'll see you, and thank you, Bob.
You take care, Sarge.
Bye-bye.
I said earlier that my hair hurts and my eyeballs ache. But I'm not kidding. This is visceral stuff. And Sarge is right. You know, for some reason or another, we have had a relatively mild hurricane season. And, it's safe to say we've had an extremely mild hurricane season. And that is a blessing in its own right. Well, you know, if you believe in blessings or things that bless. Or maybe we dodged one this year. But, you know, last year it was Katrina. Sarge is correct. If you spend any time at all with the History Channel, you know. Because these guys are big on disasters. I sat and watched one about the New Madrid quake of, 1812? You know, this is the one where the Mississippi River flowed backwards and created Real Foot Lake in Kentucky and And there was nobody, practically no one living there at the time, and the death toll was still, you know, a couple of thousand that we knew of. And now, you know, Memphis and St. Louis sit on that fault, and they're saying, well, you know, we have proven, the scientists have proven that this happens every, 200 to 300 years. We're due. There could be global catastrophes for any coastal city, not just the Gulf Coast. And the problem is, this Bush government came in with the stated goal of proving. And Dr. Bill is much better at this argument than I am because he can lay it out in a point by point indictment, and that's what makes what he does so profound and so valuable. But this Bush government, these hardcore Republicans came into office dedicated to the proposition that government cannot work, that government is not worth the effort. that what's supposed to happen when a disaster like Katrina strikes is that too bad, you know, we'll clean it up as we can. But we'll make sure that our buddies get the contracts to do it. And if they do it right, that'll be nice. If they don't, so what? Kellogg Brown and Root right now is building a massive, you know, and this is not, again, not conspiracy theory. This is public record. They are building a massive prison camp or camps here in America. There won't be any Greg Palast taking video of anybody living behind barbed wire fences with the next time. Because there won't be a next time for Greg Palast to take video of. People will simply disappear. Is it going to be because of your political views? Is it going to be because you lived in the wrong place at the wrong time? Is it going to be because your skin was the wrong color? Is it going to be because your name was Lopez? Or Perez? I don't know. I don't have that answer. But as Brad Friedman mentioned, our job is to point forward, not to give out recent history. That is the future of the United States if we do not succeed this November and in November 2008. Dig that. Get that. Get down with that. The future of America is an America with prison camps, where people simply disappear. If we do not stop these monsters, put on the brakes and start pedaling backwards as fast as we can go. Yeah, I said backwards. Because when you are crossing the finish line in a race to fascism, it's time to turn around. Isn't it? Our good friend Mitch calls from California. Hey, Mitch, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, hi, Bobby. How you doing?
I'm okay. You?
Yeah, I'm doing all right, man. It's a crying shame. I don't know what, you know, but, you know, it occurred to me the other day, you know, everybody, you know, talks about George Orwell being so prophetic, you know, with 1984. But, you know, the third thing who else was prophetic was H.G. Wells. Did you ever see the Time Machine or read it?
Oh, yeah.
Don't the Democrats and the Republicans of today seem like the Morlocks and the Eloi of the future?
Sure.
You remember doing, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, there were already, you know, there's one submissive party and one party that's a predator and one party that's the prey. And we get eaten every time, you know, and I think of the Morlocks and the Eloi. That's what they changed their name from, the Republicans and the Democrats. That are more launched in the Eloi and just get your agenda straight right out there with the topic, you know? I don't know, Bobby.
Well, you know, but Mitch, I mean, I love those kinds of comparisons because I'm a far more simple minded fella. I go for the Sneetches. You remember your Dr. Seuss at all?
Right.
In many ways, I get very frustrated with the Democrats and the Republicans because I see them as Sneetches. You know, one group of Sneetches had a star on their belly and the other side didn't. So they went and they found a guy who would put a star on their belly. So the people with the Sneetches with the stars went and had them taken off.
I got to read my source because I don't remember that one exactly.
Oh, you got it. You got to go to the Sneetches. We're living the Sneetches. We're living the Lorax. We're living the Butter Battle Book.
He's an incredible man, Dr. Seuss. I don't know. It's just there is some days, like I said a while back, it's like collecting teeth. You know, I just go out and I see, an earlier call talk about wearing T-shirts that outrage people. I have T-shirts that outrage people, you know?
Yeah.
And most people, you know, most people smile and they get it. Other people don't get it, you know? And the ones that don't get it, I find myself just like, you know, it's like exchanging a few words, like we're talking now, and then I can feel my voice starting to quiver, and I can feel my blood pressure starting to rise. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, I, you know, it's a real mental dilemma when you get to a place where you can't tolerate intolerance, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, you want, that's where I'm at now. I just, you know, I can't tolerate intolerance, so I become the very thing I hate. and in order to destroy what I hate, you know.
Yeah, but some of that you've got to breathe through, and you've got to understand that what you're talking about is not entirely evil. You know, you talk about the T-shirts and the people that get it and they smile and they laugh. Mm-hmm. That reminds me of probably the single greatest T-shirt that's out there for simplicity of message is the one you can get over. And this is not a paid advertisement, I might add.
Mm-hmm.
The T-shirt you can get over at BartCop.com that just says "Worst President Ever." And it's George Bush's face. And the cool thing is, it's not so much what it does to the weirdos who disagree, Mitch. It's what it does. And I saw it in action. Our good buddy Wayne wore it in Washington, D.C. One afternoon when we were just walking all over creation. And people would stop him on the street and say, "Where'd you get that?" And Wayne would turn around and say, "Well, you agree with this, don't you?" And they go, "Oh, yeah."
Yeah,
And all of a sudden there's a whole where'd you get it? And he's going BartCop.com. And I, you know, and the thing is, these things as something as simple as a T-shirt, Mitch, empowers people.
If there ever was a true silent majority, that we have it now. You know, I mean, you know, Nixon talked about the silent majority, and that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have a silent majority now, but that's the problem. I mean, we got to. You know, get off our asses.
Well, it's about ending the silence.
That's it, you know.
And if something as simple as a T-shirt will do that, cool. Or if, what Phil was talking about, of talking to the postman when he's emptying the box, cool. Do that.
Right. I had a T-shirt that I wore last year or 2 years ago. I still have it. I probably should wear it still. But it says Bush Christ 2004. That's the word Bush. And the word Christ, there's a picture of Christ there with the crown of thorns, you know. I mean, you know, looking really put out, leaves blood running down his face.
Yeah.
A very gory, you know, Roman Catholic sort of rendition. And other people would smile at me and go, "Yeah, right." And other people would walk up to me and say, "You know, don't you?" And I'd go, "What?" They'd go, "You know." And, you know, I mean, they would like that Bush was put there by God, you know. And I was like, I couldn't believe how many people thought.
I know exactly what you're talking about because I've got a great shirt from the guys, Dookie and Wally and Clyde over at WD40.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's a white polo shirt. It looks quite Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember the W banner with the flag flying out from it
right.
from the campaign?
Right.
Well, this one says W, and then but beneath it, under the flag, it says AR. The idea being you can't make war without W.
Mm-hmm.
I wore that to a very, very liberal, democratic, progressive gathering. And at first, I got some real, real hateful looks. You know, "What are you doing here? Guys, look, it's an anti-war show." "Oh, okay, well, yeah, hail fellow well-met. Come on in."
Yeah, people, this is not a very intelligent society. I'm really sorry to say that. You know, I mean, this is not a very, you'll never lose a bet.
You'll never go broke underestimating. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, I have another shirt that I like to wear, but it's just a Bible with a dagger through it, and it says, "This is the enemy. You know, no more wars for religion." And you can imagine, the looks I get with that one.
Well, if you ever make it out here to the Bible Belt, Mitch, leave that one at home.
Yeah, I'd like to get one like that that would have the Quran and. All the books there with a nice roll in them. Then I would wear it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's funny, you can wear a Che Guevara shirt. Everybody loves it. Wear a Fidel Castro shirt. Whoa, you know.
Well,
they're down there. That's another really funny sort of.
Well, if it is cancer that's killing Fidel, when he dies, Fidel shirts will become will come into vogue.
No, I got a beautiful Fidel shirt I wore once, you know.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. I just can't. Somebody gave me a shirt I would never wear. It said, "Vote." It said, "Vote Republican," and it had a big swastika on the front.
And can't wear that.
I can't wear that. You know, I mean, that was a. It really was true. I mean, but that's a little too true, you know.
Yeah. Right. And it there's something pain that something. Yeah. It's a painful and wrong thing to wear that symbol. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I won't wear the Confederate flag. I won't wear. We don't have Confederate memorabilia. There's just,
and it's a shame because that's started off as a spiritual symbol.
Well, it was
way back. I mean, a symbol for God or spirituality that it was corrupted through the years. Do you know? I understand. You know what the new symbol in jails now is for the white supremacists?
What's that?
The shamrock. Isn't that a shame, man?
They're going to take...
Beautiful shamrock. So if you see someone wearing a shamrock necessarily, doesn't necessarily mean they're Irish anymore.
Well, now, see, you've got Agnes upset, Mitch.
I'm Irish.
Yeah, she's not giving up her shamrock.
No, but is that something, though? I mean, you know, now whole generations will know the shamrock as an evil thing.
Yeah.
You know? Like, we grew up thinking of the word gay as one thing, and then they changed the word meaning on it, you know? There's a lot of things that change like that, you know? And you got to deal with it as you get older, as the words change in their society. But that's a real bad one.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, you probably got to close.
Yeah, we're done, Mitch. Thanks for calling, man. Good to hear from you.
All right, brother. I love you. Give my love to Agnes.
All right. Thanks. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. And Agnes, you know, instead of me screwing up the program producing all by myself on Friday, Agnes came back from vacation. She did a lovely job tonight answering your calls, producing the program. Thank you, Agnes. Brian Reznor announces John Fox, currently changing digs in Sydney, Australia, is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasting of all the Head On Radio Network programs. Our good friend Shelby LaPrey at RadioPower.org is our streaming partner and of invaluable service in all of this, with a lot of excellent programming at Radio Power, not just what comes from the horn. I got to be honest. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. And all these programs happen because the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters has thousands upon thousands of dedicated members who get up and go to work every day, and they build the American dream. And in building the American dream and supporting the horn, they're saving the American dream. And always, 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 RMR. It's all for you.
When you're swallowing all life's lies,
here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Resistance Radio. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Program produced by Catherine Day. Robin Bittman announces for us, if you're listening on IE America Radio Network or Sirius Satellite 145, Channel 145, Radio Left, RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, however or wherever you are listening, welcome. Too stupid to be president signed two bills in 2 days, one enacting his tax cut package, the other raising the public debt ceiling by $1 trillion. You think there's a hand-in-glove situation there? Why, of course. And which event do you suppose got press coverage? We'll take a look at that a little bit later tonight. Right before the program, got an email from Greg in Maryland, and he said he was waiting in his dentist's office, and he overheard a political conversation. The topic was how vehement Bush is hated by the left, Greg writes. And the person talking professed as to having no idea whatsoever what Bush could have possibly done anywhere to be so disliked.